Call the regular meeting of the Blue Valley County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Alrighty.
Am I too loud?
No, she's okay.
Alrighty. Folks, before we move to the adoption of the agenda, Brian sent me a text message this morning and I'd like to read you something. Brian got this post that Bob Olenbrook's sister had put on his Facebook page. For all of my brother's friends, I am writing on his wall so that all of you may take a moment today to say a little prayer for him. I typically would not reach out on Facebook, but he would and has for so many of you. He had a massive heart attack Monday night. They are moving him to Boston today. His only chance of survival is a potential heart transplant. In the next few days, there are several hurdles to go through to even see this as a possibility. Please keep him in your thoughts and prayers, as well as his wife Janice, his mom, dad, daughter, and siblings. Thank you. Brian, thank you for bringing this to our attention. We didn't always see eye to eye, and a lot of us disagreed with him, but there was absolutely no doubt that he wanted to serve this county with all the passion and heart that he could serve it with. So please, if you sit down tonight or lay down tonight, say a prayer for Bob. Okay. Now, one other thing, I don't want to start on a completely sad note. I'd like to welcome the FLDP class number 14 to tonight's meeting. Please stand and let it be recognized. And they did survive the bus trip when they had to watch me drive and listen to Overton the entire time. Thank y'all so much. Alrighty, now we'll proceed with the adoption of the agenda.
There's about 15 changes.
Oh, Lord.
Sorry. So on the copy you've got in front of you, it's correct, but there's been multiple changes since the agenda was published last week. So on the first, tab P and tab U on the front page have been deferred. Tab P and tab U. And on the back, under our new business, two items have been added, both of which were date sensitive and received after the board package went out. But they're date sensitive and not controversial issues, so I want you to consider those tonight so that we can get those adopted before the events actually occur. So those are the four changes I'd recommend on your agenda, please.
Do we have a motion to?
So made.
Second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Ms. Seeger's absent.
Thank you.
Mr. Nichols.
So just a few things to report tonight, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Hold on, back up one. Somebody on the 26th is getting older.
That would be Mel.
He's been getting older longer than you, though.
I'm getting younger.
So happy birthday to Mr. Sheridan coming up, and I think not too far after that followed by Mrs. Booker.
And you hope you two young ladies from the school back there haven't decided you want to sing happy birthday to me as bad as you can sing.
Helen Cawthon from the Central Virginia Partnership will be here tonight. When Jason Smith does his economic development brief, we're also going to have a small brief on the Go Virginia project, so you can get an update on that. The FSPCA had their state vet inspection this week, unannounced as always. No findings in the report, which was great. That's the second one in a row. And we do have some floor ceiling work to do over there, but that's been scheduled on our list. And but they did a really great job on the FSPCA facilities and their operations. So it's great. Three new staff workers are on board. We've got one more that's hired, but doesn't come on board until October 22nd. So I'll let you know that at the next meeting. But Emma Kreitzer started as a grounds facilities worker. Started on October 2nd. She was out in front of my building today, this morning, when it was brisk and chilly out there this morning working. Deputy Treasurer hired Wendy Snotty. She also started on October 2nd. So we're delighted to have her on board, and Treasurer's back up to full staff. And a Recreation Program Specialist was hired, Ms. Alexandra Jones, and started on the 10th. And she'll be doing our senior programs, and as well as other programs, but largely the senior programs. So we're delighted to have these ladies all on board. The paving has been completed over at Palmyra Rescue. Remember, initially they did the concrete outside the squad bays, but now they've finished the blacktop so that the kind of really bad areas have all been fixed, and it's much better for the drivers coming in and out, especially in the winter. Minor, just for all of you, the annual staff recognition dinner is tomorrow night, 4:00, Cunningham Creek Winery. Hope you can make it. We'll have the annual awards to give out to staff, and length of service awards as well. And there is wine there, by the way.
Good wine.
And the JRWA, this is great news from the James River Water Authority project. Department of Historic Resources has actually issued the burial permit, which allows us now to go on and do the further testing and the core drilling and the deep testing there. The burial permit allows us to then interface with the Monacan Indian Nation and other tribes that are the interested partners in the project, so that if we uncover any remains or any funerary objects, we know what to do with those, and that's what the burial permit is all about. It takes a long time to get that, so we're really pleased that that's been issued now, and then subsequently will be the final permit from the Corps of Engineers in the coming few weeks. And then one thing about fire trucks. Normally when fire trucks are out of service and we're buying a replacement for it, the squads normally through the county sell those trucks to third parties, and then the earnings from those sales of those old vehicles, whether it's brush trucks or fire trucks, go back to the squad to outfit the new vehicle that they're buying. In this case, there's a brush truck that Palmyra has. I think it's a 1985 or 86 model. 95 model. It's an older truck, but it's in excellent condition, only has about 30,000 miles. Rather than buying a new panel truck, the panel trucks with the boxes on the back for public works in the CIP, we'd like to just purchase this. It's a $20,000 price tag on it, but instead of going and buying a new truck, this will serve the needs for public works and for FUSD, and it'll still give the same dollar value back to the squad so they can outfit their new truck that came in, because that's what they were expecting to get from sales, $20,000. So if you all think that's reasonable, certainly the Station 1 does, we'll put that on your November 1st agenda just to move the money from BOS contingency to that line for their operation so they can outfit the new truck.
Just to get the wording correct, sure. Company.
Company, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Company 1, yep. Station 1's across the street.
Yep, that's Rescue Squad.
Sorry. And then just remember, coming up, you've got your regular meetings. The only thing that's a little different is on your November 1st meeting is when the school superintendent will be here to talk preliminary budget talk for fiscal year 19. We got those previews yesterday, Eric and I, when we were over there, but they'll do some previews for you on November 1st. So that'll be probably part of new business at the end rather than putting it up front and slow in the meeting. Now we'll put that towards the end. But I'm still trying to work that out on timing, but that'll be on your November 1st agenda. And remember, on December 6th, we'll be doing some budget previews with you to talk about priorities for the next budget year so I can finalize my budget presentation to you that comes in the first week in February. But other than that, just regular meetings through December 6th. And then sometime in December, you'll get a briefing from the CARE Task Force on their report out either the 6th or the 20th. I think probably the 20th.
Probably the 20th.
Right. So any questions I can answer for the board?
Questions?
No.
Thanks, sir.
The county website.
Yes, ma'am.
Has some nice pictures and information about Domestic Violence Month. I don't know if you put that on there after we did the resolution or if it was on there before. Domestic Violence. You have a lot of information on there, and it's very well done.
The Commonwealth Attorney's Office added some of it, and
yes. Some good information. Put a lot of emphasis on that.
Good.
Because that's real important.
Thank you.
All righty. Okay, folks, next item. All right, we will now open the first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium and state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing? And also, if you're here to speak on one of the public hearings, we ask that you wait until that public hearing comes up. Is there anyone wishing to address the board at this time? Seeing no one wishing to speak, we'll close the first round of public comments. Next item up is tab K, proposed sale of county real property, formerly known as the Columbia Elementary School. Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, so we're back here again to discuss the sale of the former Columbia Elementary School. And just since we've got more people here, I'm going to kind of go over the same timeline that we went through before. November 2013, Columbia and Cunningham Elementary School were declared surplus by the school board, declared by a resolution November 2013. December 2014, formal acceptance by the county of the schools. March 2015, we utilized a cooperative state contract for commercial real estate services. Only one firm met with the county, and after meeting with them, they didn't want to take on trying to sell properties. April 2015, we issued the first request for proposals to sell both the schools, ads in Richmond Times, Washington Post, Roanoke Times, posted on a commercial real estate website, held an open house for potential proposers. We received zero proposals on that, no one came up to look at them. In June 2015, we issued an RFP for commercial real estate brokerage services. Only one local real estate firm came to the non-mandatory agreement meeting, and from that RFP for commercial real estate brokerage services, we received zero proposals. September 2015, we issued the second open-ended request for proposals for the schools. Again, posted on commercial real estate websites, installed for sale signs out in front of the buildings, and between September 2015 and May 2017, we received two proposals, less than $35,000. To get a little more aggressive and to try to be a little more proactive in getting the schools sold, since they're just sitting there, in June 2017, we issued an addendum to that original RFP, and the board put a suggested minimum sales price on those schools. Once that occurred, that piqued a lot more interest in the schools. We held an open house for proposers in the end of June of 2017, and we had probably over a dozen attendees at each school. Proposals were due July 24th, 2017, and we received three proposals on each property. So since we're talking about specifically about the sale of the Columbia School, the proposals were as such. We had three of them, one from a Howard and Lori Hilsinger for $82,500, one from a Rivanna Canine Services, once it closed on July 24th. That one originally came in at $50,000, and then one from a Mr. Joel Loving that came in at $30,199. At that point, there was a committee that was made up of two board supervisors, two staff members, and we met with all the proposers on August 14th and 16th. Basically, at that August 16th board supervisors meeting, the board determined to move forward with the proposal by Howard and Lori Hilsinger at that time. At that time, they were the highest proposers on that property. So the board decided to move forward with, and we issued, the board approved advertisement for a public hearing to Mr. and Mrs. Hilsinger. Like I said, the proposal was the highest offer at the time at $82,500, with the next highest offer being $50,000 from Rivanna Canine Services. After that September 20th public hearing was advertised, the second highest proposer, Rivanna Canine Services, increased their subsequent offer from $50,000 to $85,000. It was mostly a cash offer. Since the public hearing had already been advertised with a proposal by Howard and Lori Hilsinger at $82,500, it wasn't issued for both of them, and the board wanted to consider both proposals at that time, so we issued and the board approved the advertisement for Rivanna Canine Services too, since they came in with a new offer at $85,000. So just some updates from from after that last public hearing. Mr. and Mrs. Helsinger sent an email to staff and the board supervisors withdrawing their proposal. Since that time, in addition, the county received, since the public hearing was advertised, the county received an offer letter from the VFW for the Columbia School for $88,000, which was above what is offered by $85,000 by Rivanna Canine Services. The one caveat to that, though, is since that offer was not submitted by the due date for the original RFP, it's not a valid offer and can't be considered under this RFP. So at this point, we're kind of moving forward right now with Rivanna Canine Services, unless the board says, you know, we want to start the process all over again and go out and issue a new RFP. So that's kind of where we are. So as I said, this is a public hearing for the former Columbia School. It's based upon the offer received, the amended offer received from Rivanna Canine Services for $85,000. And I'll open the floor for comments or any questions from the board.
With the offer from the VFW, is that a nonprofit organization? And if so, what's the taxation of the property, if any?
That would have to be determined.
I'm sorry.
It would have to be determined.
They are a nonprofit, but the defense and use of the property.
The mere fact that a property is owned and or used by a tax-exempt organization does not necessarily make it tax-exempt for real estate purposes.
What makes it tax-exempt?
I was afraid you were going to ask that. It's a more subtle question. The standards for determining that are not the same. I had a case one time where the recording for the blind and dyslexic was a 501c3 organization and was denied tax exemption in Albemarle County. And I don't know how, but it was.
You said that the $88,000 came in after the July 24th.
So the original, all the proposals were due July 24th, and that's when, per the RFP, that was the due date. So to keep everything on a level playing field with everyone putting proposals forward, everyone per the RFP had to submit a proposal at that time for it to be a valid proposal.
But existing offers.
But they could adjust them.
Existing offers could adjust that.
Yes, the existing, yeah. Anyone that submitted originally on the property, they can adjust their offers at that point. But anyone after the fact that's submitting an offer cannot. The only thing that the board can do at this point is if they wanted to consider other offers, we would have to start the RFP, issue a new RFP, and mm-hmm. process.
Okay.
The current offer wishes to increase, that doesn't require any public hearing, does it?
No. Because originally we had the public hearing because we were moving forward with the Helsingers because they were the highest offer, and at that point, the second highest offer was a good bit of ways from the highest offer. So that's why we only went with the public hearing for the one. And then after that, the Rivanna Canine Services upped their offer to the $85,000, which was $2,500 above, at that time, the highest offer. The board wanted to consider both offers. After the public hearing, like I said, we received an email from the Helsingers withdrawing their proposal at that point.
And do we have any information with regard to the proposal from the VFW in terms of?
The offer is here tonight. They can speak during public comment.
Okay.
For this public hearing.
Do we know if they have a contract or anything? Do we know how that's happening at this point in time?
No, they don't have a contract.
Were they engaging in real estate agent? Do we know any of the details?
The only thing I can tell you is the cash offer, $1,000 deposit in 87.
The one you've got from in front of you is all the information I have, but the applicant, the representative of the application is here tonight and can speak during the public hearing.
But just let me make one thing clear. This letter right here, I mean, if we had to go out for a new RFP, this letter is basically null and void. They would have to, anyone
right,
that wants to bid.
Everyone could resubmit.
Yeah, resubmit.
And new offers or existing offers could submit if you go back out with a new RFP.
All righty, any other questions? Okay, thank you. Rob Anacana and Mr. Winkler.
Okay. Good evening to the board. This is the second time I'm presenting my offer. My name is Armin Winkler. I live at 3730 South Boston Road in Troy. I'm the owner and operator of Urbana Canine Services. My business consists of law enforcement training and military canine training. My specialty and bulk of the work is special operations forces for military and some federal forces as well. I also do local canine departments, all the surrounding departments in the area. To refer to the timeline that was just laid out, the only two offers made prior to May 2017, before the more aggressive sales approach was made, were made by me. I've been pursuing the purchase of this school since January of 2017. There's been a number of things that seem to have gotten in the way. I'm very eager to set this school up as a business operations for my canine training business. I bring a lot of business into the county. I bring some high-end units into the county that train here, that work here, that stay here, that spend money here. And my business is existing. I've operated this business first for my employer, and now it's being self-employed. It's the same business since 2003. So it's been a long-term ongoing business that's been quite successful here in the county. It's a relatively low-key operation. It will not affect the neighborhood. It will not affect the appearance of the property. We just utilize the outside portion of the property for field training. We may utilize a portion of the woods for some light searching and things like that. And we'll use the interior of the building to do certain search training for bomb detection, and also finding of human beings that are trying to hide from the police or from whoever is after them. Like I said, my business has been operating in the county for 15 years, and close to 15 years, and a lot of people don't know we're here, which should give the county an idea how low-key it is as far as the intrusiveness of what we do. I have good cooperation with local law enforcement in the county here. All the neighboring counties train with me and work with me. I would ask the board to strongly consider my offer, because out of everybody so far, I'm the longest interested party. I'm the one that's showed the most commitment and the most perseverance in pursuing this. I partnered with Mr. Joel Loving to try to up my offer to be able to match Mr. Hilsinger's offer. And I followed all the rules from day one. I did not ask for an extension. The original deadline for the proposal, it was actually July 10th. One of the other offers asked for an extension. It was given. Then he asked for, he or she, whatever, asked for another extension. It was given again. It was delayed by two more weeks. My offer was in. I didn't ask for any special considerations beyond that. I'm just a small entrepreneur here in the county. I do my work. I do my business. I do a huge amount of public service for free for all the local law enforcement agencies, as well as, of course, I make my livelihood here, and all my clients spend a lot of money here in the county. I think it is in the best interest of Urbana County to consider my offer strongly, especially since everybody keeps dropping out. Most of the money is available for cash, plus a verified personal loan from Mr. Loving to help out. I don't want to speak for you, but he's a representative of a good number of the neighbors of the school, and they're all in favor of my proposal. That's why Mr. Loving agreed to lend me money. And I'm not sure what the hesitation is to accept my offer, but I would urge you that you consider my offer strongly. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Winkler. All right. Hearing no questions, we'll open the public hearing. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Anyone wishing to speak at this time, please approach your microphone, state your name and address when you do.
I'm a big believer in making sure that everybody can hear me. Now, sometimes this mic is not pleasant to me, but I just want to ensure that everybody can hear me. Okay, I appreciate that. My name is R.T. Harry. I live at 467 Martin Kings Road, up on 618. I'm here to represent the Veterans of Foreign Wars, Post 2613. I realize we were late getting involved in this thing, but we didn't really realize all the details and numbers and all that. And it takes a while to get the members of our organization to get together to agree to a certain proposition. What we envisioned for this property was to make it the Veterans of Foreign Wars Post, a community center, a food bank, and anything else along those lines to benefit the community. We have means for the money, so it's not a problem, but what we want to do is sell our previous post, whether or not that sells immediately. But I know you had a question there on the tax. So the tax that we have now is tax exempt at our 2151 Stage Junction Road, but of course we would ask for a tax exemption for this new property as well. But that would be sold, so they would offset. So I don't think that would be a real concern. Does anyone have any questions for me? I could enlighten anyone further.
How many, you say we, how many people are you talking about this organization? You're talking about the local VFW group that used to be at Stage?
Stage, yes, we're two miles from Columbia.
Right. Are you how many people are you talking about that's in this particular proposal?
We have 23 members right now.
Are they all from Savannah?
No. We have members from Louisa and Goochland, as well as Fluvanna.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the activities that the
VFW... Say again, sir?
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the activities that the VFW performs on a regular basis?
Some of the activities we perform on a regular basis, we provide funding for those in need. We hold fundraisers. We have shooting matches. We just completed two of those. We go on trips to historical sites. We are involved in providing assistance to certain Boy Scouts. And we have certain meetings there that involve, we allow people from the community to rent the facility. And they have, like we just had, we had one not so long ago for a family reunion. We provide educational facilities for any veterans that may wish to learn something about the VA or whatever and everything. We go on a visitation trip to the hospitals, all the VA hospitals, as well as the ones in Charlottesville and Farmville and all around. It's a community organization.
What are the improvements that you would make to the property?
Improvements to the property? We really hadn't got that far into it. We considered maintaining what is there and just making sure that it's something that we like the large room there, which we have a very small facility right now, and we're not able to really, we could have, like we have things for the kids like Halloween, Christmas party, and things like that.
Have you been through the property? Have you gone through the school and all upstairs?
I have been in a property, yes, sir.
Recently?
Not recently. It's been a year ago.
Okay.
How many years has the local VFW operated?
We've been in operation, I'm trying to think of the gentleman who opened that post. It was back in the 50s. I can't think of his name right now, but he was... lived right across there on Timber Road. Pauline was his wife's name, but I can't recall his name right now. Melvin Bassfield.
Has your existing facility hindered you in any particular way?
Yeah, the size of it. You know, it was an old school years ago and all that. And, you know, really, once we get to 15 people or more, it's really undersized. It has, in essence, one where the old bedroom was. They have the main room where we conduct our meetings and gatherings and all that. And then, of course, there's a restroom and a kitchen. It's awful small.
How often do we meet?
We're required to meet once a month. We usually, that's with when we get almost, we represent just 23 members, but we often get 12 or 13 there. If anybody's familiar with these organizations, that's a fantastic percentage. And everyone there is really dedicated to the coast, and we try to do what we're supposed to do.
Would there be any compatibility if you were able to work with Mr. Winkler to let him use the facility when you're not using it?
Yes, I don't really know what all he's involved with, but yeah, that's what we're looking at, providing more space and everything for other members of the unit, the community to come and do things. Other organizations that may be limited in their facilities, you know, because I realize that's an awful large building. In essence, you know, it would be a growing situation for us. We would, of course, talk to our district commander and the state commanders and see if there's any way that, you know, we could incorporate some of their programs and everything in a facility of that size. But I wouldn't have any problem with that. I don't know whether he would or not.
How many Fluvanna County veterans do you have participating? You said you had Louisa, Goochland, Fluvanna?
Yes.
How many members from Fluvanna, Mr. Harry?
I don't ever really look at that exactly. I would say half of them are from Fluvanna.
Thank you, Mr. Harry. Is anyone else wishing to speak? Come forward. Like I said, please state your name and address.
My name is Elise Wright, and I have a brand new address, and that's 4800 Pelsman Road. And I am a neighbor. I will be a neighbor of the school. And regrettably, because we just purchased this property November 30th, 2016, we were not aware of the timeline, nor were we aware that there was a deadline for proposals. Because we live in New Jersey, we're relocating here, and we weren't aware of the Fluvanna review. I assure you now we will be reading it closely. But it seems to me the matter here before the Board of Supervisors is to perhaps open up that door and allow for some more proposals and to consider the VFW's proposal. I could see how the VFW perhaps could partner with some local farmers, which I am becoming very excited to say we just saw our fields tonight and our hay is coming up. So I would ask the board to consider, even though you've gone through a laborious process, if you would open up the door to allow the VFW's proposal to be considered and opportunity to partner with them in a new and different way. And I've just learned of their proposal as you have this evening. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else? Just take turns. One wants to wait, one can go and speak. Sir, you can just stand behind him and just come up afterwards.
My name is Zane Hodge. I live at 3001 Rolling Road South in Scottsville, Virginia. I'm here to speak on the impact that Mr. Winkler has, not just here in Fluvanna County, but around the world. A little bit about my background. I graduated high school in 2009, immediately afterwards joined the military, went into the Army with a Ranger contract. I showed up to 2nd Ranger Battalion. Out of 215 people that attended the selection, I was one of 56 that graduated to make it on to to make it into Range of Battalion. I showed up to Range of Battalion in April of 2010, and 4 months later, I found myself on a plane over to Afghanistan for my first combat deployment. I then came back. I had 4 more deployments after that. I became a dog handler. I became a dog handler in 2012, and that was when I met Mr. Winkler. He showed up to Ranger Battalion. He did a seminar with us. He taught us a lot about our dogs. He gave us very expert insight as to what we needed to do with our dogs. And then following that, after I got out of the military, I found myself kind of at a loss. After separating from the military, what you have in the military, I felt like I was a small piece of the picture that was much larger than myself. I was contributing to something much bigger than myself. And I felt lost afterwards. I, for 2 years, kind of stumbled around, went job to job, and never really found that meaning. And so I called up Mr. Winkler here, because I knew him. And he said, I said, Armin, I want to be part of the best, and I know that you have to learn from the best. So he invited me down here. I started up my own business. I've been down here since January of 2017. And he's taken me in, and he's helping me to give back to the bigger picture and be another piece of a puzzle that's much larger than myself. To help you guys understand the gravity of the situation and the impact that he has had in my own personal life, and he's been doing this for a number of years, working with the most elite special operations unit there is, so I'm just one very small portion as to the impact that he's had. On October 22nd in 2011 in Kandahar, three American soldiers lost their life. Sergeant First Class Domain, he was survived by two of his daughters and his wife. He was 29 years old. Private First Class Christopher Horns died. He was 20 years old. And Lieutenant First Lieutenant Ashley White died on that same day, and she was 24 years old and left behind a husband. And I knew the dog handler that was there that night, and what had happened was he crossed the bridge, and his dog failed to indicate on an explosive. Shortly afterwards, Christopher Domey tried to make his way across that same bridge, and his life ended that night, and it set off a series of IEDs killing those three people and maiming multiple others. They were both people that worked in the same building that I had, in the same building that I was in. I was only 20 years old at the time that all this happened, and I just want you to understand that the training that he does not only impacts Louvanna County, but this impacts around the world, in Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan. The things that he teaches produce dogs that allow people like myself, young men and women, to come back to this country with all their limbs and their life, more importantly. Another guy that I used to work with, Kyle Kowalski, he was part of 2nd Ranger Battalion. Armin came up, did an aggression seminar with us, fine-tuned the dogs right before we went on deployment. He had worked with us before on a seminar, and we decided that it would be best to have him come right before the following deployment so he could fine-tune the dogs. There was a dog that we had named Spike. He was a Dutch Shepherd, never had a live bite. And Armin did some finesse work with him, got him dialed in right before deployment. When he was out in Afghanistan, there was someone who ran away from the compound. We pursued him. There was a little bit of vegetation in front of him he couldn't see, so he decided to cut his dog off leash. The dog ran no more than 15 feet into the vegetation, and he heard a whole bunch of wrestling around. He looked around the bush, and he saw there was a guy standing there. The dog had bit him, and he was hitting him with an AK-47. So if that dog would not have created that buffer zone, Kyle Kowalski is another man that would be not in this country living to this day. So for me, I don't know much about the politics as far as what's going on here, but I would just hope that you guys can see that this is a chance for everybody here in this county to be part of a small puzzle in the bigger picture of things. And ultimately, to me, I mean, that's all that matters, because I'm here today because of men like him. So that's all I really have to say. Does anybody have any questions?
Just, I want to say thank you.
Thank you. as well. Myself and my parents own the property at 1663 Wilmington Road. We're 0.9 mile away from Columbia District School. I actually went to school there. And it was brand new when I came. So I've seen it in its various incarnations over the years. I've seen it sit dormant for a number of years. And with all the proposals that were presented, I followed them closely. Even though I live in California, I followed things pretty closely here. And the maintenance on the property, the care proposed. So I would ask the board to entertain the thought of having Mr. Winkler offer approved. I think that would be great. Most of the neighbors that I've talked to, myself included, would really like it. We think it's a great idea. As far as BMW Hall and all that, they do great work. The issue I have is the proposal was not timely presented. And also, while he was speaking, I actually just Googled BFW halls, and I don't see the particular hall that he's talking for listed on Google Maps. So that may be an error in submission, but I don't see the hall that he's talking about currently listed.
It's for sure there.
It's there.
Okay. All right, great. But anyway, thank you for your time, and that's it.
How's your dad doing?
He's doing good, actually. He's doing better. Thanks.
I'm sorry. Last time I saw him, we had to go to the rescue squad. Next, anyone else? Yes, come on in, Mr. Love.
Good to see you, Charles. It's great. I've been seeing Charles for 40 years. Joel Loving, 6115 State Junction Road, Grand Hills Farm, very close neighbor to the property, and an investor, as you now know, for the old Columbia School for the purchase of the Rivanna, by the Rivanna Canine Services of that school building. I think you've heard from the gentleman before Charles that spoke here. We don't want to let this deal slip through our hands. This is a worthy cause. This is not something that's a kennel we're talking about. This is a training facility. The school was built as a training facility. I think it's worthy that it's being used for this cause, but even more worthy that it's going to be maintained as a school building by this cause. It's good for the community, whether the community is being considered as Columbia District or whether it's considered part of what we need to be responsible in the war on terror in Afghanistan and Syria and the places that he was speaking of. So I would like for you all to consider this sale as something worthy that Blue Mountain County can give not only to the community but the country. These officers and their canine partners will help keep our families safe, whether it's here or fighting a war in Afghanistan. Just want you to keep that in mind. My family and our neighbors ask that you approve of the sale of this building to the Rivanna Canine Services. And as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Lovett. Anyone else? Okay. Seeing no one else, I'll now close the public hearing.
So, you know, my concern, not concern really, I mean, obviously, you know, there's no argument with what the fine work that Mr. Winkler does. However, we're right back where we were last time we did this, which is we had a late offer and we extended consideration to that late offer.
We didn't have a late offer. We had an offer that was on the table that was amended.
An original offer amended at that point in time, but it was not part of the public hearing, right? So
the first public hearing it was not, because at that point the board decided and chose to go forward with the Hill Center, because at that point they were clearly the highest offer.
But the increased offer came in before the first public hearing.
Well, it doesn't matter if it's before or after.
I know, but it came in before the first public hearing. You still went on with that public hearing.
Correct.
Because you'd only advertised to consider the Hilsinger bid.
Correct.
Before that, you got the higher offer in, so then when you did the Hilsinger public hearing, you deferred to have a second public hearing to hear the Winkler revised offer.
So they both could be considered.
Right.
Correct. No,
so you could consider either one of those.
No,
still.
No, I do understand that, and I'm just looking for consistency, right?
Okay.
I mean, if we go through a certain process because we got a higher offer, and because, as Mr. Payne explained, we can consider that higher offer at that point in time, it seems to me that there's a certain level of consistency. Now, having done that, there's a lot of people here, there's a lot of good things happening here, and we have an offer that is within a few thousand dollars that's, you know, very close to it. I'd like to put this to bed by just, you know, matching that offer and getting on with life, in my opinion.
Well, and just let me but say... Let me,
the Hillsingers came tonight, though, too. They could submit a revised offer because they were part of the original offer.
I do understand.
And they're still on the table.
Sure, I do understand.
And let me just if we have to go back out to RFP again, if we want to consider other offers, well, one, there's staff time. You're talking at least 60 to 90 days to get this process rolling again, and there's going to be additional costs.
No, and I appreciate that. The difference in this offer versus the other offer was essentially the same thing.
You will spend $2,000 or $3,000, right?
Correct.
So it's essentially the same thing. So, again, from the perspective of the board being consistent in its actions, all right, that's an important aspect of what the board does and how it presents itself to the public. I think that there's it's hard to weigh and say, okay, you have the VFW, which does good work for veterans, against the fine work that Mr. Winkler does, and how you weigh those considerations. I do understand that, but I do think that the board is being inconsistent if it doesn't provide an opportunity from that standpoint.
Can anyone explain to me that it's not inconsistency?
It is from your process, it's absolutely consistent because you only put an RFP out and set a deadline to accept bids. You accepted three bids that came in before that deadline, and between that time, July 24th, and whenever you make a decision of those three offers, those numbers could change 20 times.
That's the negotiation phase.
Sure, but Mr. Payne also informed us that we could accept another offer at that point in time, whether it had been done.
What the Procurement Act provides is anytime you have competitive procurement, and that's what this is, you go through the process of soliciting proposals. You had the opportunity, and you took the opportunity, to review all the proposals that came in. There were some of them that were obviously unacceptable. My personal favorite was the Nigerian prince. You are entitled to hold public hearings on such of those as you think is appropriate, and then you are entitled to negotiate with the proposers. I'm addressing Mrs. Booker's question. The difference between Mr. Winkler's increased bid and VFW's bid is VFW did not submit a proposal under
to the RFP.
To the RFP.
To the requirement.
According to the process. And there was no proposal at all. It was even less appropriate than the Nigerian prince, because there wasn't any. The difference is the law does not allow you to award to accept the proposal of somebody that doesn't submit a bid at all during the open period. Now, what you are allowed to do is to reject all the bids and go back out for proposals. That's not what Mr. Winkler is asking. Mr. Winkler is asking, I've made a proposal. My original proposal was significantly lower than somebody else. I'm willing essentially to match that person, and you elected to allow him to come to a public hearing on that revised proposal. So the difference is you don't have the authority to award to accept the proposal of the VFW without going through the entire process again.
And then any offer
I do not consider
that was the same case. You're saying without going through the process.
We have to start the entire process over.
Brand new RFP.
We have to issue a new RFP for another year.
Understand, there's two aspects to this. One is that if you do that, you will have to go through the necessary, as Mr. Dahl has said, the staff time and the advertising, all the expenses and whatnot. But the other thing is you have no guarantee that the people that you found acceptable, you know, tentatively acceptable, like the Hillsingers and Mr. Winkler's operation, and those, that they would come back in. You may not get anybody.
Their offers are not carried forward. Everyone would have to submit a new
offer. Start over.
Right.
I do understand. So why present the 88,000 proposal to us?
You didn't.
We didn't.
Hold on, Mr. Payne. You did not, the staff did not present that to you. That was presented by a member of the public at the public hearing. Now, Mr. Harry is a citizen. He has a perfect right to make that presentation, but it does not have standing as a proposal under the Procurement Act.
And the only reason you've received a copy of that is because I can't withhold those information on potential issues involving county property. So I present that to you as information, and then the public member came up and presented during the public hearing. Again, if you want to consider that offer, you cannot do that during this public hearing.
No, we understand.
You will have to terminate the existing offers, put on a new RFP, and then accept any offers that come in.
What we did last time, which was to defer.
Because he was not part of the existing RFP.
You are entitled to defer if you want to,
right.
But you can't consider anything else other than what's been proposed.
Except for the three offers that were submitted.
Right.
Yeah. The only offers that were responsive to the requirements of the RFP, the July 24th deadline and a variety of other things, were the three that you've already vetted, that part of the board members were part of that process that we've already vetted. You considered two of those strongly. One of them was very... very off the table. One was much lower, and so you took the highest one for public hearing. Then subsequently, just before that public hearing, you got a higher offer from that middle one, and now you're at a public hearing for that one. So you could still consider the Urbana Canine Services and the Hillsinger offer, and there could be counter offers tonight if any of those two parties wanted to, but you can't take anything other than those three original ones unless you start an RFP process over.
Okay.
I appreciate the DFW coming forward, but I do believe that throughout the entire process, everything has been done above board and in front of everything, and I think that tonight I'd like to see Urbana Canine get it.
I just need to say this.
Absolutely.
We put out the RFP to sell the building.
Yes, ma'am.
That's our only thing, is to sell the building. Someone came in here with $200,000, we would sell it to them properly.
No, ma'am. An RFP is a request for proposals.
We would reject the offer.
And you can consider a variety of factors, including use of the facility, including tax impact, including benefit to the community, including price.
The proposed purchase price is not the only factor to consider when it's an RFP as opposed to an RFB.
All right.
You could consider, as Mr. Nichols says, is there economic development value to the proposal? Mm-hmm. Is it consistent with the neighborhood? Mm-hmm. Is it tax productive? Mm-hmm. Is it worthy use? And I'm not. I think in this case you have, obviously the VFW is a worthy use. The Hillsinger's use was a worthy use. All these things are appropriate uses. So if you had $100,000 for a public nuisance, you could say we don't care what you pay for it. We're not selling it to you for that purpose. So an RFP is a different kind of critter than simply a bidding.
Well, I think that I'm asking the question because I think that the people in the audience need to know how we go about these things, what things we have to consider, and all of that, so that it is fair and that we've looked at everything.
In connection with that, Mrs. Booker,
and the Procurement Act and so forth.
The public, I assume, is aware, certainly should be aware. This has been an unusually long and difficult process that you got, first time you sent this out, you got next to nothing in terms of offers. You had to do considerable massaging to the RFP when you sent it out the second time to get it so that it was that we had reasonable and responsive offers. Mm-hmm. So this is not something where the county's just, you know, flipping pages.
And you could also go through your mind, well, let's start it all over again. Maybe we get different bids. Maybe we'll get something.
My thought on that.
I'm going to voice out what I'm thinking, and what other people are thinking, and what
we've gone forward for over 2 years, 2.5 years now, I believe. And in 2.5 years, people have had the opportunity to step forward. Like I said, these were the only three that took part in the RFP process, and I think we're totally above board and consistent.
I'm not saying that. I'm just putting out everything anybody could be asking, anybody could be concerned about.
I think that's a good discussion because lots of people have asked those things in the community.
So, for people to understand the process is good. The sale of this property is not as quite straightforward as the sale of a residential house or anything like that. It's a much more complex process.
You don't have to have a public hearing if you're selling your house.
So, I'm just Weaver, do you have any comments, Mr. Weaver?
Well, this has been for over 2 years. And I think we've given people the opportunity to come forward. And I think we've followed the process. I think it's time to move on.
The only comment I would make, and this is entirely up to Mr. Winkler, and I'll be happy to make a motion, is there may be an interest in deferring this so that he can speak with the VFW to see if they can come to a consensus that may be in their benefit for both parties. If they're not interested in doing that, I'd make the motion.
I was just one comment on that when they talked about the food pantry and things like that, and they're going to have stuff in there. You're not going to be able to allow dogs to go through.
I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I can see where both would serve, and they have an opportunity to speak to each other and, you know, potentially do something. But that's, I leave it up to the valid offer right now.
Well, go ahead and make the motion.
Well, I'm asking him. That's a question to him.
Well, it would depend on really how much conversion they're going to do, because there's a certain amount of vigorous activity that happens when we train the dogs. I need to do certain things to set up for, I pretty much need the entire school. Would I allow somebody to use the exterior grounds or use some of the larger rooms? We could probably negotiate that, sort of a joint shared thing. Probably wouldn't work for me because I need to be in there all times of day and night. I honestly don't understand the resistance to my offer. I've been the longest, most consistent. I followed all the rules. I didn't ask for any special considerations. The VFW, I have many friends who are veterans of foreign wars, one of them just spoke earlier. They do noble work, I appreciate that, but they didn't follow the process.
So they could possibly come to you about using the big room if they needed a larger space.
A big picnic or play fair for the kids. That's just down the road. I've driven by the building several times. If they want to do that and we're not using it, I'm certainly open to that.
Yes, sir.
They just can't move their things in because I don't want to be responsible for breaking a chair or wrecking someone's valuable things.
Yeah, I don't want anyone to leave here. I mean, in my personal opinion, that there's resistance. We have a job to do.
We ask questions.
We want to make sure things are fair and people hear what process we go through as a board to make decisions.
I'm resisting. I'm running the school right now for two dogs for a federal agency, for two dogs for Albemarle County, and one dog from West Virginia. We're driving from Albemarle to Buckingham to Louisa, here and there and everywhere, because we don't have a location here anymore. I used to use a Cunningham school a fair bit. We do some footstep tracking in Pleasant Grove Park every once in a while. To have a centralized location near my business operations is very important to me. It cuts down on my expenses, my costs, and it brings people here. We don't need to buy gas in Buckingham or stop for food in Buckingham. We want to do that here. I bring people here into the county, and the more we can do here, the more it benefits the county, not just myself, but other business owners in the county. So I again ask you to strongly consider my proposal, because I think it's in the best interest of myself, but also the county, and like Mr. Hodge said, you know, maybe a greater good.
Thank you, Mr. Winkler.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the proposed sale of the county's real property known by current street numbering it as 563 Wilmington Road, Mount Myra, Virginia, and also known as the former Columbia Elementary School, to Rymana K9 Services, a Virginia limited liability company, for a purchase price of $85,000, pursuant to their proposal to purchase the property dated July 20, 2017, made in response to the county's request for proposal 2016-02, sale of county property, Columbia Elementary School, former 563 Wilmington Road, Palmyra, Virginia, 22963, as amended, subject to approval as to form of a contract and appropriate terms of sale reflective in any negotiations, a survey addressing the telecommunications easements and or subdivisions of the property, and the drafting of customary closing documents by the county attorney. Furthermore, the Board of Supervisors authorizes the county administrator to execute the contract, survey, or plat, and any customary closing documents contingent upon the same being approved as to form by the county administrator.
Second. Motion's made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, you didn't say this. It is the case. Mrs. Eager is
4-0 with Mrs. Eager.
Correct.
Absent. I'm sorry. I just want to make sure I shook that young man's hand for that.
Well, I'm not shaking.
Go ahead. You're more of it than me. Yes, sir. All right. No, he's not. Mr. Hodge.
Yes.
Mr. Weaver would like to shake your hand, sir. He's a veteran.
I'm a veteran's wife. Yes, counts. Amen.
You didn't know you were going to come out of that. You didn't know you were going to come out of that rock star tonight. Thank you, son.
Yeah, thank you,
guys. Next item is tab L. Temporary ordinance change to move the central absentee precinct location. Mr. Payne.
Mr. Chairman, this is the second time you've considered an amendment to this section of the code. It's section 2-2-3B of the county code relating to the central absentee voting precinct. Under the terms of the county code, that precinct is in the historic courthouse. The election that's coming up in November, the historic courthouse will be unavailable because of the use of the courthouse by the Commissioner of Revenue. That's a temporary measure, of course. This ordinance is designed to revise the ordinance with respect to the central absentee precinct only, and only for a limited period. It's designed to accommodate this election. So it will be effective on November 1, and it's effective until December 31. That's a time period that's specifically designed to bracket the election and anything that may happen after the election where they would need this precinct. Because it's a temporary ordinance, there will be no permanent change to the county code. And so after December 31, 2017, the precinct will revert to the courthouse with no further action on your part.
All righty. Any questions? All right, hearing none. We will now, we have a public hearing. Yes, ma'am. All right. I will now begin the public hearing. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Does anyone wish to speak at this time? Seeing one, I'll now close the public comment. Do we have a motion?
I move to approve, all right.
I move to approve an ordinance revision entitled an ordinance to amend chapter 2, article 2, section 2-2-3B of the Fluvanna County Code to designate as a central absentee voting precinct the Weaver Building in Carlisle, Virginia, in place of the historic courthouse for any election from November 1st, 2017 to December 31st, 2017.
All right, do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Ms. Seeger's absent. We will now move forward with tab M, ZMP 1703, the Columbia Rezoning. Mr. Brad Robinson.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm going to give a brief presentation for zoning application ZMP 1703, which is for the former town of Columbia. So this is an ordinance to amend the Fluvanna County zoning map, the purpose of it being to establish county zoning districts within, on all properties within the limits of the former town of Columbia. As you may recall, the town was dissolved July 1st of 2016. Since that time, this area of the county has been considered to be unzoned, so this whole effort behind it, basically the purpose of it is just to assign county zoning to all those properties. It is in the Columbia Lecture District as well as the Columbia Community Planning Area. So this is the proposed zoning map. There were two options presented to the Planning Commission. This is the option they chose to go with. So to describe what you see on the map here, and the blue area represents where the floodplain is. We wanted to try to show where that is in relation to the properties. Because for the most part, all the properties south of Route 6 are primarily in the floodplain, so there's limited opportunity there. So most of those properties are proposed to be zoned agricultural, with the exception of these parcels here, which are proposed to be zoned industrial I-2, and that was a request of the property owner that owns those properties. There's an existing industrial business there, so the proposed zoning on those properties accounts for what's currently there. And then all of these properties that directly adjoin Route 6 on the north side are proposed to be zoned BC, which is business convenience, sort of a light commercial district. And then everything north of that up on the hill as you drive by, all of that's going to be zoned R4, which is a limited residential district. And that is a residential area. There are a couple of civic uses up there, such as churches and a post office, but most everything up on the hill is residential. So this was the option presented to the Planning Commission. This is what they chose to go with. The other option basically had these properties that didn't accommodate that property owner's request. It also zoned those properties agriculture. That's the only difference between the two options. And then this is the same map that shows where the properties the county is in the process of acquiring. These squares that you see on the screen, and they're different colors. The green dots, or the green squares, are the ones that are certain at this time that are included in the grant. And then the red and the yellows are the ones that are of interest or could be in the future. But as you see, all of the properties are, for the most part, in the floodplain. These are on the fringe, and everything is, for the most part, within the floodplain.
So probably the only thing you could really use it for is a park or something like that.
You could build the federal floodplain standards, but you'd have to do that, and that would be very expensive. In our case, because of the FEMA grant, when you acquire those properties, you're not allowed to build habitable structures on them. So it would remain fallow or parkland or you know, temporary uses.
The other practical consideration, Mr. Weaver, is that it's very difficult to get financing to build anything in the floodplain.
So you couldn't build anything up on blocks and then get it above the floodplain.
That's what Nichols was talking about.
Okay.
You could,
but
expensive.
Well, it is expensive, but it's also hard to get finance.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions?
Oh, he's got one.
Oh.
I'll try to go quickly.
That's okay.
On the screen is a parcel. You may have seen in the packet there was some correspondence from a property owner of this particular parcel, he was asserting that it historically has been used for commercial, but just based on some of the old maps that we look back at from years ago, this property has always been zoned residential. So we just wanted to present that to you and show you where this property was. You see, it's in line with the rest of the residential district.
It's behind the church.
And it's just to the left of there. It's that the great big white building's down on the highway.
Yeah, it's right here.
Right. Well, right. But that might have cemetery.
Cemeteries are up above on the hill in the yellow, so it could be, but I think they're just slightly farther up in where he's pointing on there.
Yes, right there.
Because there's one behind the church and one north of the church.
Right, that's the church right there. Yeah, and then the cemeteries wrap around it in a horseshoe.
Right.
Okay.
And then this this map is the result of the public hearing that was held at the Planning Commission last week. The property owner of this parcel requested, as you see right now, it's divided by Route 6. There's a portion north here and there's a portion south here. The proposal, the zoning proposal proposes to zone this in its entirety BC. The property owner that spoke last week wants the portion south of Route 6 to be zoned A1 to match this parcel here, which is going to be zoned A1. So just to make you aware that the adjoining parcel right here to the west is in the same predicament. It's divided by Route 6, and there's a very, very small portion here. That's on the south side of Route 6 as well. Again, we just to be consistent and prevent split zoning, propose to zone these parcels in their entire BC, but you certainly have the discretion to amend that as you desire. And again, the property owner requested this be A1. So that would result in the properties being split zoned if you chose to go with that option.
And the owner is here tonight to address the board if you have questions about it.
That's correct. So to quickly summarize, as you saw on the map, everything south of Route 6 for the most part to be A1, with the exception of an existing industrial business, which is going to be zoned I-2. The parcels directly along Route 6 to the north are going to be zoned BC, business, convenience. And then north of that, up on the hill, to be zoned R4 residential. And as part of this application, the Board of Supervisors should consider how this request does or does not align with the comprehensive plan. So that concludes the staff's presentation. I will mention at the Planning Commission whether it's 4-0. To recommend approval of the map that you saw earlier. And that concludes my presentation.
Mr. Chairman, I have one comment.
Yes, sir.
On the staff's presentation. Mm-hmm. Mr. Robinson's presentation is very comprehensive and appropriate. Technically, though, there is one action that you've already taken with respect to zoning in the area of the town of Columbia. Previous, whatever zoning was on it before is gone because of the disestablishment of the town. However, the floodplain zoning does apply under the ordinance. So what Mr. Robinson describes as the blue areas are currently zoned for the flood overlay district. So don't think you're doing anything like on that tonight. You're not. That's already there.
That's the right thing, right?
Yes, that's right.
If we were to split zone it, what kind of issues would that present?
Well, that's going to depend on what the what an owner would want to do with it. And I'm trying to look in my crystal ball, and it's a little hazy today, the truth, because the law has some peculiar things that can happen between parcels that are not zoned the same. So just to give you an illustration, and I don't want to get into every possibility, but just give you an illustration. Let's take parcel 66 there. Zoned for, it's proposed to be zoned for convenience business. So let's assume that somebody put an appropriate use on the northern part of the property, but wanted to put parking on the southern part of the property, or signs, things like that. He could do that because those are accessory uses to the commercial use. if it's zoned A1, he couldn't do it because I...
We said you'd tie his hands. We would tie his hands if we
could. Well, it could. There are countervailing considerations that may be worth it to the owner. I don't know. But my concern is that I think there are... This is not as simple as it might sound. You might be taking a use that had... Obviously, you're not going to put the Mall of America on this property because it's too small. But the question is, what could you do with the southern part of 66 and that little tiny sliver of 65? I don't know what you can do with it. But I wouldn't want to see it be the case that somebody wanted to develop, let's say 66, the northern part of 66, but needed additional parking to be on the other one. If it was zoned A1, he might not be able to do that.
Or vice versa, they put something on the
surface. Certainly. So it's not as simple as it is on its face. One way to address this would be if you were to accept the staff's and Planning Commission's recommendation, simply do all the purple that's recommended to be purple. The owner could always come in and ask for rezoning, and he could consider the possible ramifications of it. He has some idea what he wants, or he may have some idea what he wants to do with it, and my concerns may not make any difference to him. But that would be an individualized consideration rather than doing it on a purely hypothetical basis.
All right, any other questions? Okay, thank you so much. I will now begin the public hearing. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak to this time? Mr. Harry?
I'm Mark T. Harry. I haven't owned lot 66 there, and that map makes it look a lot larger than I think it really is. But anyhow, I'm just trying to be consistent. I don't see, it's not a big deal to do split zoning. It happens all the time. And, that other area there is agriculture. It's got one residence, three-bedroom residence on it. And I see no benefit to me or anybody else for that portion to remain commercial that you'll tax higher.
It's approximately about a quarter acre on both sides of the highway. It's about a half acre lot total, but about a quarter acre on both sides.
It was the original lot in the town was a half an acre. So, yes. Roughly a quarter of an acre on each side, except for the right-of-way and highway.
Any questions for Mr. Harry? Thank you, sir.
He owns both.
He owns
65 and 66, sir?
No, he owns...
Just 66?
Just 66.
And 82.
Okay.
The yellow one.
Thank you, Mr. Harry.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, 82. Anyone else? Folks, come on up.
Copies of my comments about staff and board.
Name and address, please, ma'am.
I'm Brenda Beasley, and I live on Dogwood Drive in the Columbia District. I'm repeating much of what I said at last week's Planning Commission meeting, but I feel this information should be outlined clearly for your benefit before you vote on this issue. We own 8 small lots in the town. Columbia, the R4 designation states that in order to build a house on any of these lots, either of these criteria must be met. A minimum lot size of 15,000 square feet is required for property served by public water and sewer, or a minimum lot size of 2 acres is required for property not served by public water and sewer. Our lots do meet the requirement for minimum lot size for a house if served by public water and sewer, but our lots are not served by public water and sewer. Conversely, our lots are too small to meet the 2 acre minimum required for a house if served by private water and sewer. Forgive me, shaky voice. A new water line was dedicated in 2010 that is said to have the capacity to serve 100 homes. That water line does not serve the area where our lots are located. a great portion of the town is not served by the water system. As I have been told by Aqua Virginia and the planning department, no part of the town is served by a public sewer system. Due to the fact that our lots and dozens of other similar lots are not being served by public water and public sewer, they do not conform to the R4 zoning requirements that would grant the numerous by-right uses afforded by that designation. They would not conform to the code for any of these by-right uses. Residential dwelling, home occupation, cluster development, townhouse or group home, kennel or greenhouse, marina, or public park. In 1996, these 8 lots were assessed in total at $6,600. By 2005, it was $20,000. By 2007, $50,000. By 2015, down to $35,000. And now in 2017, up again to $40,000. I understand assessments are adjusted periodically to align with the real estate market. However, if these lots are unsuited for any by-right uses, how does the market even apply to them? From what I can determine, there are few, if any, undeveloped areas of the town that conform to the R4 requirements, because though a portion of the town is served by public water, no part of the town is served by public sewer system. Those areas already developed in the R4 zone appear to have been grandfathered in to the new R4 designation. Thank you for taking
time. Anybody have a question for Ms. Beeson? Thank you, ma'am.
I guess I would wonder why they fluctuate so much, those lots like that. You know, it doesn't seem reasonable that there'd be that much difference in a period of 1 year or 3 years period. It just, you know.
That's that magical number that we try to figure out.
Yeah.
That's a reasonable question, but you don't really have the ability
we don't have.
No, I know, but I was just, it just raises questions.
Oh, it's a legitimate question, sir.
I'm sorry, I didn't have a question for Mrs. Beasley. So
could you come back up, Ms. Beasley?
Thank you. It's not very clear to me exactly if you're asking for that portion to be zoned a particular way, or you just highlight these issues?
I'm not asking at all for property to be zoned anything other than, I guess, what's already been settled.
You're just bringing it to our attention that these
yes.
are deficiencies.
The entire town doesn't seem to conform to the R4 zoning.
Ms. Beasley is in many ways correct. Of course, the problem is this county inherited a situation that's been gestating for over 200 years, and it would be nice if we could wave a magic wand and correct everything that has developed over the years. We can't do that. If you were asked, if nothing were there, and this were simply open land, you wouldn't allow this development. You wouldn't have allowed the town to be developed this way, because she's right. Most of these parcels are not suitable for residential development without water and sewer, which doesn't exist. But you take the world as it comes to you, which it did last summer. And Mr. O'Brien's question is a good one, because the question that occurred to me during the Planning Commission meeting was, what could the county do to help this landowner with her problem? And the answer is not much, because the R4 district is the most dense conventional residential district we have. Now, I am not prepared to tell you that property couldn't be developed. I think there are a couple of ways that I think it could be developed. It would require some changes, but that's not to say that it can never have any use made of it.
Yeah, that's my question.
Yeah, I think that's one of the challenges that we're looking at with the whole R4 component, public water and sewer. You know, public water being one aspect, public sewer being another aspect.
Well, one answer to your question is, these lots,
the square lots that you see are half acre. That's the way the town was designed. Obviously, some of these down here on the eastern end have been redeveloped. But I think I hear Ms. Beasley say she owns four of them.
I was going to say, oh, so you know what
those are? You own all these, don't you?
Not the two on the far top, but
okay,
these two next. Yes.
Okay, well, there's eight of them then.
There's eight. She said eight.
Right.
Okay, that's 4 acres.
Right. So we are. Should we not be looking for a way that they can be developed?
Well, no. We should not be. The landowner should be.
Yeah, but
what I'm saying is
looking to.
What I'm saying is, under the R4 zoning, I believe, and I can only say this in the abstract because I don't have, you know, I don't have the hydrogeologic facts and things like that, but just from the face of the ordinance, I can think of a way that it would be, I can think of at least two ways, that it would be possible to rearrange the lot lines in such a way that it would be developed. But that's not up to the county to do that. It's up to the applicant because we don't know what the applicant wants.
Okay. All right.
So you can always resound it too.
Yeah.
I think that's
in green space in the flood area and things like that.
I was just sitting there thinking that it was just going to be sitting there with nothing
One of the things that's possible, and again, I'm not telling you can do this because require study on it, engineering, but one of the things that's possible would be to have a cluster subdivision, which sounds
three quarters of it.
But you, and you could put one or two houses with open space centered around the floodplain. That would make a perfectly reasonable use. Now, one of the things you have to do is you have to vacate the old streets, but none of the streets in there has been developed.
Yeah, right? I was going to say, the only street is the one on the front side of her property.
Just that one?
Or the north side. The north side.
Right.
So it cuts to the corner, right?
Fayette. So that's the one that was just
Stage
Lafayette.
Stage Junction Road is not an original street of the town of Columbia.
I wouldn't want to have a driveway, if I had to, entering on Stage Junction.
I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does.
If I could say one thing.
Yes, ma'am.
Regardless of whether I have eight lots or one lot, there's a whole lot of people in the town that only have one lot. Mm-hmm. They're not suitable for any development. And in fact, for my lots, I spoke with Aqua Virginia today, and they did a rough calculation to extend the lines to our properties would roughly cost about $50,000.
Yeah. With the open space, could the people that have just one that are half an acre, could they do the open space?
I can't do the math in my head.
Okay. That might be something to look into.
It definitely is. There are.
Yeah.
To give them choices.
This landowner that she approach a qualified land planner to see what would be feasible.
I think the Planning Commission is starting to look at alternative potentials. The Planning Commission, I think, is starting to look at other types of zoning that might be suitable for some sort of public development that's not R4.
That's possible. But right now,
it is what it is.
This is as close as we can come.
Anyone else wish to speak at this time? Yes, sir. Mr. Brady.
To downzone parcel 54A143 from commercial to residential, I would consider this action to be a taking of my property without compensation. This parcel has been, for well over 100 years, the back lot of the Walton store. There was even a sawmill back there at one point, and it is the only part of my property that is not in the 100-year floodplain. Since I requested commercial zoning in the property owner survey and that has not happened, I can only assume that there is opposition to the idea that I made public that the highest and best use for my property would be a brewery and a restaurant. I would like my parcel 54A-143 to remain commercial, or you can just buy me out. I would even entertain an offer from the church next door. Mr. Nichols knows my terms, and then I could just turn my back and walk away and not look back. But in the meantime, I will do everything legally possible to retain the commercial zoning of parcel 54A-143. This property is the only thing I have to enhance my retirement. Why are you trying to reduce it in value? Thank you for your time.
No question. Thank you, Mr. Gregory.
We've got the building in front of
Mr. Grady. Mr. Grady.
Mr. Grady. Is the building in front of right there on the street, on the 6. Is that you too? Used to be
yes.
Mr. Watkins. What?
Well, Walton store.
Walton store.
Yes.
What's happening to that?
It's in the 100-year flood.
Oh, that's right. Okay. And you have something that?
I have
okay.
A half an acre behind it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Is there anyone else wishing to speak at this time? Seeing none, I will now close the public hearing. Do we have any other comments or questions?
No,
it's a challenge. It's going to be a challenge.
It's a challenge, but yeah.
So, Mr. Penn, do you want to comment on Mr. Grady's, Mr. Nichols? Mr. Grady's comments, Mr. Payne, or Mr. Payne, one of them.
Well, first of all, it's not accurate to say that it's zoned commercial. It is not zoned anything. So if I would take Mr. Grady's word that it's been used for various uses in the past, and lots of things have happened in Columbia. We had a tobacco warehouse there for many, many decades. Those are all gone. What the property is suitable for is what it's actually suitable for. It's going to depend on what the actual proposed use is and what the facts are underlying. Again, if it's in the floodplain, then the uses of it are very limited. But that's not the county's. That's not the county's doing. That's Mother Nature's. The county's simply recognizing Mother Nature's and protecting against the kind of loss of life and property that you saw in places like Puerto Rico and Houston and places like that. And what we saw in 1969 and 1972, which of course what led to this thing in the first place. But Mr. Grady sounds like he's anticipating that he's going to claim that zoning this in a particular way is going to constitute a taking. You'd have to prove there's no reasonable use of the property, and then he would have to exhaust his remedies with the Board of Zoning Appeals. That's what the Board of Zoning Appeals is for. And
so is this essentially because we don't want split zoning there? So,
no, split zoning has nothing to do with
it. It's half in the floodplain.
Half in the floodplain.
Right. But if you can zone part of it,
a quarter acre?
I mean, why are we creating the issue when there is no issue, maybe is
well,
my question.
One of the, well, there,
well, consistency along the neighborhood.
That's what I'm saying.
First of all, we need to get, I think it would be inappropriate not to apply some zoning to it.
Right.
The staff's analysis is that the R4 is the closest you can come to having reasonable zoning. One of the peculiar things, if I'm reading the map right, is the floodplain actually takes the frontage of the property. And I'm not sure how you would develop a commercial use that had to be accessed across floodplain floodplain area. Again, I'm not going to tell you it couldn't happen, but I would think it would require some answers to some pretty tough engineering questions.
So we've essentially also been told that you can't do anything with it as R4 either, right?
I'm sorry?
We've essentially been told you can't do anything with it as R4 now either.
Well, no, I don't know that I think that's true. And one obvious thing to do is if it can be used, can practically be used, but doesn't meet the criteria of the ordinance, if the fact that it can't be used arises for reasons outside the control of the developer and antedate the zoning ordinance, which obviously anything that antedates the zoning ordinance is brand new, not even in effect at all yet, could you have a variance for it? Maybe you could. Again, I can't tell you that because that's in the discretion of the Board of Zoning Appeals. They have guidelines, but they have to apply those guidelines. So Mr. Grady's certainly entitled to his opinion, and he may be correct, but there may be other uses that can be made of the property. I think I would consider this one to be less clear than Mrs. Beasley's situation, but I would not concede Mr. Grady's position that this zoning is taking this property. And certainly not because it changes it from commercial to residential. It's not commercial now, it's unzoned now.
Right, but presumably you would come to us and try to change the zoning.
He certainly could. Right. If you zoned this R4 and he thought BC was appropriate, he could certainly come in and ask for it to be rezoned to BC.
And that's what I thought.
And you can consider that.
Which, I mean, I'm just saying, it's like we're spinning our wheels on this, right?
Yeah.
Unless there's staff's objection for some reason.
Well, the only point I would raise is that if you've got a reasonable argument for split zoning on something or change zoning, if you do it now, you're taking that action, applying it, and an applicant doesn't have to subsequently come in, fill out the application, pay the fee, and go through the process because you've already decided because you're making a decision about zoning. And I'm not suggesting you go one way or the other. I'm just suggesting that if you're inclined to go towards Mr. Harry or Mr. Grady's positions on any of these, if you do it now, it's done.
Right.
And the applicant doesn't have to come back in and pay a fee and process it, and staff doesn't have to process it. That's not a value judgment. That's
the
just
counter argument to that is that there may be consequences that you indeed haven't foreseen, that the owner hasn't foreseen.
Such as. And that's one of the reasons of all the public hearing process.
I was telling you, the example I was giving you with Mr. Harry's parcels. It could be that the two parcels can be used together for appropriate development, a reasonable development. But if you take one part of it and make it another zone, it may not be usable for that. Again, with Mr. Grady's, if you took a portion of it and zoned it commercial and a portion of it zoned it residential, and you needed parking for the commercial use on the residential property, you wouldn't be able to do that. That's why I think proposals like this, or arguments like this, really aren't very satisfactory because they don't have enough facts to support the conclusions that are urged. This is a difficult, the staff worked hard on this. It's a difficult situation where you have 200 years of limited or no planning have ended up with this situation, and you inherited it.
Right. A lot of those challenges would be addressed during any kind of site development as well, too, right?
Conceivably.
Yeah.
Sir?
Do you want to hear from the applicants again?
Mr. Grady.
Public hearing.
Well,
if you come up to the microphone, please. I'm sorry.
You haven't closed the public hearing yet, so.
Right.
I just wanted to say I have 6 parcels. I have no problem with the zoning that has been applied to the other 5. Only this one. It's a separate parcel.
Alrighty. I'll do it again.
No.
Anyone else wishing to speak this time? I'll close the public hearing. Any other comments from the board?
You want me to make a motion?
Sure.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve ZMP 1703, an ordinance to amend the Fluvanna County, did I miss something? An ordinance to amend the Fluvanna County zoning map in order to establish county zoning districts on all parcels within the limits of the former town of Columbia.
I think you should note that, excuse me, the rezoning is as shown on the map recommended by the Planning Commission.
As shown on the map.
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye. I guess aye.
Okay, all opposed? And chair will vote aye. Motion passes 4-0, one absent. We will now move to MC, ZMP 1702, Village Oaks, proper amendment. Mr. Robinson.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This is application number ZMP 1702, which is a request to amend a proffer. As I just mentioned, is a request to amend. The screen says remove, but that was the original request, but this is now a request to amend proffer number 8. That was associated with rezoning request ZMP 0402. Just to recap the history, the property was originally rezoned in 2005, and then since then there's been a couple of requests to amend. In October 2010, that request was denied. And then in 2013, there was another request to amend. That request was approved. And now this is another subsequent request to amend. The Planning Commission heard this application at its meetings on August the 8th and September 12th. They recommended approval by vote 4-0. This is the location of the project within the county. You can basically see it's located within the Lake Monticello area. And to get an idea of the project or the property we're talking about, this is known as Village Oaks, which is along Lake Monticello Road and across from the main gates or the main entrance into Lake Monticello. This is the property that was rezoned in 2005 to the current zoning of R3 with proffers. This is just an arrow to show what its current state is. You can see for the most part it's still undeveloped. There have been a couple of homes built on some parcels over here, but most of the site is still undeveloped. And this was the rendering or the master plan that was approved along with the rezoning in 2005. Proposing housing, and as you may recall, a senior living facility, assisted living facility here. And there were a total of 15 proffers, I believe, maybe 18 proffers that were approved with the original rezoning. All of those proffers are listed in the staff report. The applicant is requesting to amend proffer number 8. So as it currently reads, and this is the wording that resulted from the amendment in 2013. I won't read all of them on the screen, but the primary components there, you'll see number 1, specifies that it's the housing intended for persons 55 and older. And then number 2 specifies that at least 80% of the units has to be occupied by one person that's 55 years old. So all of that language was added in 2013. And as mentioned earlier, this application started off as a request to just delete proffer number 8 in its entirety. Based on the discussion that occurred at the Planning Commission, the applicant chose to go the direction of amending the language instead of deleting it. So now the proposed language, as seen on the screen, proposes to read that the minimum 35% of the housing will be designed with at least one bedroom on the first floor, such that all typical living functions can be accommodated on the first floor of the home. So this amendment removes the restriction that the units have to be occupied by persons 55 or older. And basically, it just ensures that a certain percentage of the units are designed with main floor living design for persons that may be seeking that style home. So to conclude, this proffer amendment request, it would reduce the amount of private housing that's planned or was formally planned for persons 55 or older. And Naperville Village
would become the primary age restricted community in the county or within the Ravenna CPA. Even though this amendment would occur, that the development overall, Village Oaks would still contain the assisted living facility development. The developer still plans to move forward with that. The Board of Supervisors should consider how this request does or does not align with the goals of the comprehensive plan. So that concludes my presentation. I'll mention that the developer, the applicant, is present this evening.
Mr. Chairman, can I make a comment on,
yes, sir,
on the procedure? There's one thing that, if you were listening very carefully, you probably noticed the Planning Commission actually considered this issue twice, two successive meetings. It was apparent, and Mr. O'Brien may want to comment on this too, but it was apparent that the Planning Commission was not really enthused with the application as proposed, and suggested to the applicant that it may want to go and consider revising that. They then deferred action on it until the second meeting, and when at the second meeting the applicant had amended the proposal, and that's what was accepted by the Planning Commission. I just want to explain to you why the Planning Commission heard it twice. That's why.
Okay. All righty. Any questions for anyone?
What the applicant, sir?
All right. Will the applicant please come to the podium and begin the briefing?
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Appreciate you hearing us on this tonight. I'm Charlie Armstrong. I'm with Southern Development. And we have owned this property since 2003, 2004 time zone. I want to say one thing very clearly up front, and the same thing I said to the Planning Commission as you consider this. This is a change. It's a change to the overall vision for this particular project. There's no doubt about that. The original rezoning was in February 2005. That's more than 12 years ago now. I was here with our team at that time. We've been back to see you about this particular property a couple of times since then. The most recent one was 4 years ago. Each of those times we've been back to see this board, there have been efforts to make tweaks around the edges of this same proffer to try to get this project going. We built the Route 18 improvements that you see in front of the main gate now. And developed the first seven lots of Village Oaks in 2012, that's 5 years ago. In those past 5 years, only three of those lots have sold to senior home buyers. Despite a tremendous effort on our part, a tremendous investment with those road improvements and the subdivision, it looks good, it shows well. There's no issue with the location. Meanwhile, in River Oaks, which is the non-restricted subdivision just behind it, there were 27 lots, and those all sold out, many of those to retirees. It's forcing us to admit that our original vision for Village Oaks is not working like we would all want it to. It's just the reality of the market. We've been at this for over 12 years now. Granted, we had a little recession in the meantime, but even since then, things have come out strong, and we're seeing buyers everywhere. It's just not working. So why is this not working? Seniors, we're finding, are no longer seeking senior-only communities. I'm speaking generalities. I'm sure there are some seniors who do want that, but as a group, generally. That was a trend that seems to have passed. More seniors recently seem to want the vibrancy that comes with mixed ages and mixed uses too. Some examples that are easy and close by, Spring Creek. There's no restriction in the Spring Creek, but there are an awful lot of retirees moving to Spring Creek. What they're looking for are communities designed for them, but not restricted to seniors. They do want one level of living. They do want bedrooms on the first floor. That's important. They want streets with sidewalks. They want some amenities. The housing design is what they're really looking for. One other thing that we think is a why this needs to change is at the Village of Nahor, which we are building out, and that is a restricted community. There is enough inventory there right now at the current pace for another 6 years of home construction. Everybody, especially the residents who live there, would love for that to happen faster, I'm sure, but we're just not seeing enough demand to make that pace any faster than what it has been. What's not changing, and this is important about Village Oaks, no change to plan to the senior living facility. That's been a question that's consistently come up. I actually had a meeting just yesterday with an interested developer of that facility. They're in the infancy of the conversation, but they have paid attention to the market study that Deanna has recently commissioned, and that we talked to them a couple years ago. But that market study, I think, has brought them back to the table. They've commissioned an architect. There's real money being spent to do some concepts for a building there. It's a nonprofit, too. It would be a great user. No changes are proposed to the properties for the commercial development of the community. No changes to the infrastructure that was promised, all of which we've already built. We're bringing water to the site, roads to the site, and a cash offer that we've already paid to VDOT. Scope of homeowner association services will not change. That's important to seniors, including lawn care done by the HOA and things like that, so that really it's a little bit more of a carefree lifestyle. And builders will continue to offer one-level living in the community to try to attract seniors. But the vision is still to get as many seniors there as we can. So why is this proposal good for Savannah? First, this has just sat for too long, and I think it's time to get it going. But relevant to the comp plan, Savannah wants development in the development areas and not in the rural areas. Comp plan calls for 70% of new building permits to incur in planning areas and 30% in the rural areas. Right now, Savannah is experiencing the opposite, with 61% of new building being in the rural areas and only 39% in the planning areas. The reason for that is there are just not enough building lots in the development areas right now in those planning areas. But there are plenty of rural cluster lots and other rural lots out there. Water and sewer is important. This site has water and sewer. This would bring buildable lots for multiple ages online right away in the planning areas. I don't see much coming down the pike in the planning areas for residential thus far. There have been a couple things. But without something, that growth is going to continue to go through growth areas. And lastly, and this might be most important to us as the builder of these folks' homes, the people who live in Village Oaks right now, and there were three homes that had sold, and just last week we lost one of those buyers. They had decided not to move there. They had a homeowner contract and were ready to move in, but for whatever reason, they're going somewhere else. So there are only two homeowners in not existing homes in Village Oaks. They both support this. One of those support letters made it into your packet. I don't think the other one did. This is from the longest, thank you, Steve. This is from the longest resident in Village Oaks, a letter of support. They want to see things continue. They agree with the philosophy that they don't want to be only seniors there. They would like to have some diversity of ages there. So we're here to ask you for this change tonight, and I'm happy to answer any questions that come up now or as you would.
So I noticed in the language of the proper amendment that you're making, and I know in the Planning Commission you spoke a little bit about wider hallways, making it comfortable. It doesn't really address that per se in what the amendment is addressed there. Can you give us some assurances as to, you know, how the builders would go about doing that?
Yeah. That's
and
the
why you didn't include that language specifically?
Well, because different builders do it differently. We want to build as many of these as we can, but if another builder needs to come in, we don't know exactly what their program is. So the wider doors and wider hallways are something we do as a standard in the product that we design for seniors. It makes sense, and a lot of builders do. I just don't know that every single one does. But anybody who has done the market research would know that if you're targeting that demographic and you're building that first floor, that's better what you need to do. estate property, that it would also make sense to do that.
What percentage of the lots would you anticipate that you might develop?
What we like, or what we
expect? What percentage would you anticipate?
We would like to do 100%. I don't know the future.
Based on your previous experience and history with developments, it's been 50%.
50-50. We don't have a buyer in mind right now to sell anything to. We've been building in Flutana for a long time. We like building in Flutana and keep doing it, but we certainly would want to be able to sell it to somebody just like a real estate developer. So 50-50, but that's not really a. I can't say that for sure. Might be 100% us. It might have somebody come along and says, I want to do all one level living right now, and I need all those lots. So it's 100%.
At what point, I mean, I know it's early to say you can't commit to it, but let's say you're at 50-60% capacity. Is that the time and place when you think, I'm answering my own question here, since you're in negotiations or early negotiations with a potential person for, potential party for the assisted living facility. Does that make sense? With or without, the development of the property right now? Is that something that's limiting their decision making in some way?
Possibly, yeah. I think they feed on each other. Each user, whether it's a home buyer who wants a single family home or a developer of an assisted living facility, wants to have some certainty about what's going on around them, what's going to happen in the future around them. So for us, we'd love to see the assisted living as soon as possible because it very clearly paints that picture. It doesn't leave anything up to anybody's imagination. And for them, they want to know that development is going to progress around them and not be stagnant for a long time. So, yes, both want something to move forward hand in hand.
Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm happy to answer questions later if you want.
All right, thank you. Hearing no question from our board, we'll now open public hearing. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Anyone wish to speak at this time? Anyone?
I'm sorry. I was starting to get up.
I saw that as I was dropping.
I was just curious. I'm James Kelly. I live in River Oaks, so I'm on. If you go back to the map, you can point at it, and I'm actually at the very end, right about there, that's where I live, and we've been there about a year. We bought our land from Ryan Homes, which I assume is just going to kind of come in and grab up some of that and build it out, and I just haven't had time. This is actually the first time I've seen the proposal and the changes to the property to think about how it might impact the 27 or 28 people there and the home values and the streets and such. So I just haven't, I don't know if, there is no crystal ball to say how it's going to impact the value of my property or my neighbor's property, but certainly something that I'm thinking about is saying, begin to change what was planned when I, made the decision to buy my home. So I don't think I have a great point here other than, this is relatively new. I don't think any of the, I'm pretty sure none of the people who own homes in that development have any idea that they're switching it about, so I just didn't know if they. Sorry, I'm a bit inarticulate. I guess I just don't know what the uncertainty means or the changes mean for my development.
How many folks in River Oaks are? I mean, how would you describe the demographics of River Oaks?
I would say about half retired. It's 27 homes. I'd say that of the one, most of the people that do work from home, and then I'm just literally counting my neighbors. I'd say about half of them are retired. A quarter of them probably go to work, and another quarter work at home.
Okay. All right, thank you. All righty, anyone else? Seeing none, I will now close the public hearing. All right. Any comments?
So originally at the planning commission meeting, my concern is again sort of the consistency of the board. When developers come, they present plans. What do we as a board at that point in time make the decision in terms of what that plan would look like for the county and what do we approve it? And when we make changes to that plan, I think we lose some of that consistency. Having said that, the market, I agree with Mr. Armstrong, has changed somewhat. And, maybe it was accommodated in the sense that, you try to say, well, here's how I can position myself in order to do that. Can't look down the silver ball and say this is exactly the way it's going to happen, but we've seen demographically in Flavanna that we tend to have a lot more, really that middle balance, half and half, half retired. No better example than that. And so I feel kind of confident that community would continue to develop with that ratio. And the one thing that I was really concerned about that is not happening right now, that I made clear that if I were on the board, if they were ever to come back and ask to remove the assisted living facility, I would be against that, because I think Flavanna desperately needs a facility like that. And I'm glad to see that they're not doing that. So I'm pretty comfortable with the fact that this community can develop, that they can reap the benefits of their investment, that we can reap the benefits of a new and attractive neighborhood, and still see that assisted living facility develop. So I'm okay with this change myself.
Yeah, his statistic talked about was 61% in rural areas and 39% in growth. Okay, any other comments? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approves ZMP 1702, a request to amend proffer number 8 of ZMP 0402 with respect to tax map 9, section 8, parcels 13 and 14C, and tax map 9, section 13, parcels A, B, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Second. Please excuse me. We have a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No, sorry, folks. Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. We will now move forward to the action matters. At tab N, surveying of Zion Crossroads Water and Sewer System Project Agreement number 6, Ms. Tolman. Y'all have a good evening, my little ones. I'm sorry, Ms. Tolman.
Is required to create two utility blocks for both the sewage pump station and water storage tank at Zion Crossroads. The agreement includes setting new boundary corners, preparing plats, showing the improvements within 5 feet of the boundary for recordation. The project agreement is going to cost $6,650. We're asking for that as a supplemental appropriation from unassigned fund balance. That will increase the new cash funded budget for the project to $778,390. You'll see up there the prior original budget, $575,000, prior supplemental appropriations totaled $196,740. And then adding this gives you the new cash funded budget. Any questions?
So we're from the original budget to where we're going to $778,000. We're talking about neighborhood of increase of about 40% over what we had originally projected.
The original, the $575,000 was just what you cash funded to be in. We were well aware ahead of time that it was that was not
going to
be enough.
It wasn't a budget when you set it aside, Mr. Weaver.
Okay.
It was just a portion of
just
the
chunk.
Cash yet.
Right.
You just set some dollar aside, and that $575,000 happened to match up with the other piece of it in that budget year, and that's the amount that was available that you slid aside. So it wasn't based on any budget estimates at that time.
Okay.
That's just the cash funded portion.
Oh, man.
What is it?
I'm sitting here coughing, I'm sorry.
So two motions on the screen.
Any other questions, sir?
No.
Okay, motion one. I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $6,550 from unassigned fund balance to the Zion Roads Water and Sewer System project budget with the funds necessary for project agreement number 6 for 3 boundary flat plots to create two proposed utility lots.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
All right. Aye.
Whoa.
65.
It's two different numbers.
Your father, right? Your father.
Is it okay? Is it okay?
So you made the motion to the dollar.
Yeah, the motion two is incorrect.
Okay.
Okay, we've got a motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Go back to the you.
Yeah. Second motion.
I think he's trying to.
I just need to fix something here quick.
All right.
Hang on.
Let's
go make that 65.50.
Okay. It's
65.50. That's fine. Okay, Ms. Booker.
Are you ready? I motion 2. I move the Board of Supervisors approve project agreement number 6 between Fluvanna County and Bowman Consultant Group for additional services associated with 3 boundary plots to create 2 proposed utility lots for the Zion Crossroad Water and Sewage System project totaling $6,550, and further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as deformed by the county attorney.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Ms. Seeger absent. We will now go forward with the presentation, the Economic Development Quarterly Report. Mr. Jason Smith.
I'm going to introduce Helen Coffin with Virginia Economic Development, or Partnership for Economic Development. Okay. She's going to go through the Go Virginia program briefly, then I'll begin my report. Helen?
Hi, good evening, Helen.
Good evening.
President of Central Virginia Partnership. We're the support organization for Go Virginia Region 9. We have recently named Region 9, instead of saying number 9 all the time, the Piedmont Opportunity Corridor. It goes from Fluvanna, Louisa, all the way down to Nelson County and up to Fauquier, so all the planning districts 9 and 10. I'm going to leave these the PowerPoint for you all. You each got a packet of information. I'm just going to go through it really quickly. I don't. You've had a long night already, and I don't want to need to go forward.
Bless you, Austin.
Bless Mastie. I should have learned that.
And they have copies of the presentation.
Right. So a little bit about Go Virginia. Again, part of this information, so you all have it. If someone asks you what it is, you're able to be able to take some talking points out of this presentation. But it's really about the state incentivizing localities to work together on economic development projects that qualify to create more high-paying jobs. Why it's needed, there's some talking points for you all. I think it's pretty neat that the state stepped up to do this kind of program, very unusual for a state to do this. The reason is because, as you see on this slide, the blue line's below the gold line, so that Virginia is trailing in performance to U.S. We typically exceed the U.S. performance in things like this, and we aren't doing as well as we'd like. Part of the reason for that, and I like this slide, and you all may want to take a look at it later, is that manufacturing, for example, contributes $186,000 to the gross state product, whereas a retail trade job contributes about half of that. What's happened over the past 10 years or so is, even though we created in Virginia 42,000 new jobs, the average GSP value, kind of going back to that last slide, has decreased so that the overall impact is a negative $6.3 billion. So that's why the state cares about this. They want to create higher paying jobs so that we reverse this trend. Regional boundaries, this again just shows you we're planning District 9 and 10, and then we're region number 9. We're led by Brian Cole, who's executive site lead at LexisNexis, and Tom Click, Patriot Aluminum, in Louisa County. 12 private sector members and 11 public sector members. The public sector, we've got a couple of elected officials, a couple of economic developers, Teresa Sullivan from UVA, two of the three community colleges in our region, the president serves, so it's pretty varied group. And the private sector really represents almost all of the different localities involved. Again, a timeline kind of tells you we've been working on this for a while. The main thing I want to share tonight is there's two pots of money available. One is by a per capita formula, $546,000 is what our region got. The other is a separate pot that you seek separately for competitive funds. The idea there is mainly that regions would work together. So two of the nine regions, or all of the nine regions would work together to go for competitive funds. What we have in our region is not only the $546,000, but another $250,000, so just about $800,000. So we took some of our money we could have used for other purposes and saved that to put towards project money. So how it works, two localities have to contribute at least $50,000. So the minimum is 20% once you get above $250,000 cost for a project. But anything under that, the localities have to contribute $50,000. I thought that was disappointing. That fits a much more urban area, better than it fits rural Virginia. However, that's just what the criteria is at this point. What you can do is submit projects through a pre-application to govirginia9.org. We'll take a look at it, make sure it qualifies. Or they can call us up. We don't want people to spend a bunch of time on a project that really does not fit their criteria. And then also on the website now, again at govirginia9.org, you can find the full application and application instructions. And you can tell Department of Housing and Community Development did it. It's pretty, comprehensive. I'm trying to say a nice word for bureaucratic. Anyway, you submit projects to the regional council. They approve it, hopefully, and then it's sent to the Go Virginia Board for final approval. The areas where we're accepting projects is talent or workforce development. And in fact, Tony O'Brien serves on the Piedmont Workforce Network Council. They have a meeting next week to talk about workforce projects. Nice thing about workforce projects, PWN has locality money already, so all we have to do is come back to you to get resolutions of support. We've got some money. So that's a really nice starting point. Growing existing businesses, some of that's broadband and that kind of thing. Small business entrepreneurship, and then site readiness, which you guys have learned a lot about from Jason and his good work. So trying to complement those efforts. And target markets that are really our old target markets were reaffirmed by the growth and diversification plan. Potential project examples, again, I don't want to get into too much of that. What you can't use it for, it can't be used for marketing, it can't be used for construction, unless it's a road into a specific site or something like that. It has to be very site-specific. Information on where to find us. And then the scoring guidelines, so the four criteria and how projects have been scored, mainly at the board level, the state board level, it's very important. And then our contact information. But we really are excited about this. I think it's a neat opportunity for our region. We don't have a project application deadline yet. We're really out there talking to folks to try to generate some interesting, good ideas. Any citizen could come up with an idea. We'd be delighted to entertain that and help them connect to other regions or other localities that might be interested in something similar. The last but not least, you may want to think about putting at least a little money in your budget for fiscal year 2019 so that you've got some ready to go, even if it's kind of a reserve fund. I'm not suggesting any particular amount, but we are, as we go out around to all the localities, we are suggesting that's something you may want to think about. And with that, I also stuck in the partnerships quarterly report. So you all had it. I know you get it electronically, but you get so many things. I didn't know if you had a chance to look at it. So I stuck that in there. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, and thank you for your time tonight.
Yes, I have a question.
Sure.
Economic development. We don't have a water system yet. We're in the process of developing a water system. And I noticed in the paper within the last several days, talking about unemployment. And Fluvanna's was approximately 3%. And yet you look over to Louisa with all their water, theirs is more than ours. How do we explain that? Because that's supposed to reduce unemployment. To me, it's going in the opposite direction.
Well, and again, I don't have all the data with me tonight, but we look more at labor participation rates, and I don't remember what they are for Louisa versus Levant. But one challenge you have with unemployment rates is right now, I'm housed at the Workforce Center. There are lots and lots of people still coming to the Workforce Center looking for work. Many of them are no longer on unemployment rolls or counted as unemployed. And so there's lots of folks that are still in need of work that aren't captured through the federal unemployment rate number. I'm really excited about your water, so I may not be the right person to ask about that, because the thing I would say that Go Virginia is the type of program that would incentivize Fluvanna and Louisa working together on something like that water project. So if you've got anything else you might need to do, I hadn't thought about that, but this might be an opportunity to get some state matching funds for that. And I don't know if that's correct. I'd have to check it out, but there could be an opportunity there.
Yeah, they had a list of, I guess, 4, 5, 6 counties, and Virginia was, I think there was 2 other counties at 3%, and the rest of them were all higher. So I found that interesting. You know, we use the reason that we need water to decrease unemployment, and here we are, a county that has water and has had it for some time, and they are also expanding, and yet their unemployment is, it's contradictory to me.
Another issue we see a lot is underemployment, so people have a skill set that should enable them to get a higher paying job than they're able to get currently in our region. That's a big issue for us. Career ladder jobs, so people kind of getting stuck on that entry ladder rung and not being able to move up that career ladder because the opportunities aren't there. And frankly, the tax revenue. I mean, to me, the biggest reason for you all to have water and sewer is so that you're able to get some revenue from the business, from potential businesses, and you're growing your existing business.
Well, that would be the same reason for Louisa.
Doesn't have something to do with the population.
I have not studied that question.
Their population is about 6,000 or 7,000 more than us, but they're a vastly bigger square, area. But the rates are so close all through Central Virginia. We range from about 4.2 to 2.9 normally, and we've been way under the state average. Fluvanna has been since the recession.
Sure. I'm a glass half full kind of guy.
Yeah.
I choose to think that's because we're willing to go to work, do whatever job we can get.
That's right.
If we get water and get higher paying jobs, then we'll just be better off for it.
Yeah.
Well, we want less unemployment.
Unemployment, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The drive all along has been for tax revenue from business, not from houses.
0.5% of 30,000 people, you're only talking about 150 people differential. So really,
so then we shouldn't worry about water then.
Migration. Well, that's the way I'm trying to make. I would disagree with that. But
yeah,
I'm trying to make is just regards to jobs. Yeah, which is that significant of a number. Good company moving into Zions Crossroads because we have water and infrastructure to solve that problem for both counties.
Frankly, I'd love to have all those businesses open up and bring the workers from some other county and come here to work and then go back home.
That would be nice.
We'll have to take care of the schools and the students.
What you
want to do is create.
You're on to something, I think.
I hope so.
Yeah.
We just don't want more kids right now.
Yeah, we want more kids. We have room for them.
Mr. Weaver's just going a little cranky.
Yeah, I'm a little cranky.
Thank you so much.
That's a good point. You'll find this one interesting.
Chairman of the Board, I wanted to provide you all with an update on some economic development news and highlights in the last few months. As I'm talking, feel free to ask questions, interrupt me. So we've been pretty busy. Broadband Access Task Force, we had our most recent meeting on Monday, and our plan is to come to the Board within the next couple meetings to present our findings from the last 7-8 months that we've been meeting. We've got some good stats to share, and a recommendation will be coming to you all in the next meeting or two. And before I get too far into this, I just want to say thank you for accepting Harmon Winkler's bid. We've been working together for probably about 8 to 9 months. I remember when I first took him out to the school, and it felt like it was a match made in heaven. So really appreciate you keeping his business in the county. Senior affordable housing, that is something that Mr. Armstrong referred to in his proposal or his presentation. It's good that
they're willing to continue that partnership. Actually, the PHA met with him, I believe, yesterday about continuing the relationship, and hopefully we'll be able to present in the next couple months some positive news on that front. Shepherd Sites program that is moving along. I gave you all a presentation on that a few weeks ago, and we had an EDA meeting this past Monday. We hashed out some policy data, and I hope to share that final presentation and policy with you all, if not the next meeting, sometime in November. Go Virginia, just to piggyback off of what Helen had mentioned, it's a good opportunity. We had the chance to submit several properties for each locality in Region 9, and we submitted five or six properties in the Zion Crossroads area to be assessed, basically providing a grade, if you will, on where we are with site readiness. We shared the Williams and Alexander properties combined and separate. Together they make 156 acres. The next steps for this phase would be to get the families together, talk about the grade that we received, and then talk about some of the Go Virginia Opportunity Site Readiness program options to see how we can get more path ready. Continue to meet with expansion opportunities, businesses. We've had discussions with Wayne and myself, have had discussions with almost all of the businesses that are in that 250 Zion Crossroads corridor. Luckily, they are in their budget process, they're in their capital improvement plan process, so they understand, they know where the line is, what opportunities there are to hook up, and every few weeks we're connecting with them to make sure that we're all on the same page with dates, timelines, etc., so we can hopefully, while the dirt is fresh and dug up, they can hook up. Partnership with the Chamber to host quarterly Lunch and Learns. We just hosted one 2 weeks ago, Business Personal Communication. The first one was back in June. We're averaging about 22 or 23 businesses for each session. Another good program that we've started is Piedmont Workforce Network. Works with localities to host job fairs. We had one in, let's say, July, and our intention for next year is to host two, one in the spring, one in early fall. I want to say we had 30 to 40 folks show up, which was impressive for the first time, so we continue that partnership. And then I just wanted to explain our business retention and expansion program. It's not as easy as just posting it online or put it in a program guide. It's a lot of dedication and work. Not from just our department, but the business folks. I was talking to Mr. Going with Modesto Farms tonight, and there's just certain windows that we can't get into their offices because they're just slam-packed busy. So we talked about meeting up in December, first or second week, when poinsettia season is kind of slowing down. But this program is a visitation program. We're going to establish every year we're going to host a survey, a business survey, business client survey. Talked about the Lunch and Learns, that we had a great annual appreciation event. We partnered with the Chamber, a local business. We'd like to continue that annually. May is a business appreciation month. So we're going to make sure that event is during that month. We'll have a Lunch and Learn during that month. And we'll continue to grow with the Chamber and programs like that throughout the year. We offer free ribbon cuttings. The Chamber has an opportunity for businesses who are members. They host and coordinate and work with the new business to have a ribbon cutting. We'll also partner with them and do our part to make sure those bids are successful. And then when we have a lead, I'm in direct communication with the Chamber to make sure that they know there's a new business and new opportunity for our relationship to start. Business Spotlight, Mr. Nichols shares that information with you all monthly. We it's one way for us to showcase the businesses, but it's another opportunity for us to hit the street and meet with those folks and make sure that they understand that we're backing them 100%. Quad County Business Summit Partnership, thank you all for attending. That was a partnership we started last year, Orange County hosted at one of their, farmhouse special event. We had opportunities in the county. This year was at Spring Creek. We had over 200 registered. Probably had 50 show up that didn't register. But it was a great event, great venue, and we're looking forward to next year. Here are some projects that we're currently working on. One of the active projects, Deja Vu. This is a company that is looking to move into Zion Crossroads. They have a $8 to $10 million capital investment plan. 35 to 40 jobs. It's looking like it's going to be around 37 to 38. We're pretty close to making an announcement, but it sounds like they've moved forward with the landowner and making a lot of progress. We've already connected with BBCC to implement a specific training program for their new employees, and that's something that we can offer with BBCC's partnership to any new business, whether they're expanding in the county or moving into the community. Project Hope, that actually closed a few weeks ago. We were in the running for the Carriersburg facility, and we do have folks looking at that branch, that facility. Sometimes it comes down to water and sewer, sometimes it comes down to location. Just depends on what the business is looking for. But it sounds like they will be looking into the Mid-Atlantic again next year, and we'll stay in touch with some of those decision makers. Project Notebook, that's very active. We're initially they were looking at a few places in Virginia and Pennsylvania, and I believe we made one of the final cuts in Virginia, so we're looking forward to hearing feedback from them in the next few weeks. They're looking to start business in a locality somewhere in the Mid-Atlantic the first quarter of 2018. Project Wentz, we've had discussions with a family the last month and a half about opening up another vineyard right off Route 15. And I believe as of last week, they were in discussions with the property owner to take ownership. So
they're not in Cunningham?
No.
You don't get all of them.
Oh, got it.
This would be a great compliment to Cunningham and Thistlegate.
Absolutely, yeah.
Nelson, we can have our own tours.
Nelson has their 151 for Manic and have our tours and Triangle. But that's looking to be within the next 2 or 3 years. They might be able to open up and take some room. Next year they're hoping to start developing the grounds and then possibly go on breaks at the end of 2018, or at least 7 stage. Project BBQ, we've been talking with group investors the last few weeks about having a brewery and restaurants up in Zion Crossroads. We've actually had discussions with the property owner. They've chosen to move forward with that landowner, and maybe we can make another announcement in the next 4 to 6 months with that. It's coming along pretty well. We've connected them with the Small Business Development Center. They have a business plan. The guy's done this before. One of the guys has done this before. He's got a successful background in opening up a brewery in Petersburg. So he's done this before, and he's chosen to do something inside. So we're excited about that. Project Christie is a long-term play. A group out of New Jersey is looking into several localities in Central Virginia. We've only had a couple conversations with them, but they're green. They're just getting started, and they'd like to expand and move somewhere in Virginia. So keep you guys updated on that. That's CB Pedley. Typically, how that works is sometimes folks will contact our office, sometimes folks will contact Central Virginia Partnership or VDP, depending on where they're coming from. So it's important that we all communicate and work together. That's been working really well. Project Marshall, we've had discussions probably the last 4 months. It started with one of the interviews at the Columbia School. A gentleman came by, he was looking to have a meat processing plant, and he was interested in one of the schools. And we started talking, and we've been in touch with a landowner within the last 3 weeks. And I believe they're going to make an offer here pretty shortly. We've also talked about having a retail storefront so we can also offer some local products as folks are driving from Cunningham.
I hope you have about 10 other pages like this.
Right? A lot of
I'll sit here and tell 12 o'clock. Some of us
got to get up front.
So, Project Recycle, this is a local business that is looking to expand. They're in the process of closing on a land contract, and their concept is pretty cool. It would be a call center employing about 50 new jobs, at least a $2 million investment, and I don't want to give out too much information, but we're hoping that in the next 2-3 years we can continue to work with them and make a good announcement for that area. Project Top Notch, this is another current business in Fluviana County. It's a long-term play. We've been in discussions with the decision makers for almost 2 years now.
That's not computer. That's not computer.
No.
That's
the one of the fun parts of my job. I can make up names.
He's been he's been trying to impress Mr. Nichols with military code names.
Yeah.
And code names for everything.
It's all cool stuff.
So they have multiple branches throughout the East Coast, and Virginia is one of the locations that they'd like to stay in and expand. And we offer a great opportunity because now we have expanding businesses and new businesses coming into Zion Crossroads. Project Hop, this is another business that would like to expand. And we've met several times over the last month and looked at a couple different properties. It sounds like, I talked to them this afternoon, and it sounds like they're going to be making a decision within the next couple weeks. There's an opportunity with AFID. It's an agribusiness state grant. We might be able to work on together. Help them get some additional funding.
Are they in competition with
other places? They are not in competition, and that's one of the things about the craft beer industry. They're looking to partner with each other. One of the things that has kind of halted the craft beer folks is there's not a lot of distribution opportunities for them. Ginger Brewery started their own distribution company, and they're based out of Fluviana County. And once they're able to find, what's that look for? You have a question?
The brewery, I thought, was in Albemarle.
The brewery is in
Ginger
Scottsdale.
Brewery distribution.
They started a distribution center.
Yeah. Hey, that might be Kingston.
So that's only gonna.
They don't have room over there.
Fluviana Breweries. And other local craft breweries and other localities because they'll be able to get their products out. Really quick, local meets. And some of you may have attended the ribbon cutting on the 24th. All being Cunningham Schools Project. We can probably
they're sold.
Cross that out. That was
bingo.
That was a good opportunity.
Let's move forward. All right.
Well see, done. We had the state federal officials breakfast. That was well attended again. Thank you all for supporting and participating in that. We had a group of site selectors from Europe, the European American Investment Council. to attend their national conference in Texas is like $1,500. I'm not looking at my budget. But events like that are not cheap.
Goes with
The workshop that we had in Charlottesville on September 29th was... Whenever you can talk with site selectors, they're going to be up front with you and tell you, you know, this is what you need to concentrate on. If you don't have site readiness, if you don't have sites that are ready, then you're not going to be looked at. Things like that. If you don't have natural gas in this area for this business cluster, then you're dreaming. So events like this are really helpful for me and our department, so we can continue to move forward and present programs that are going to make a difference. Talked about Go Virginia, talked about Kelly, attended the Beta conference last week. We had a group of site selectors again that were present, and it was good to get or hear feedback and questions and make those contacts. Stonegate Event Rentals, this is a, I want to say, we've reviewed their site plan, and now the ball's in their court, and we're waiting for them to start construction. If you drove by Design Station right now, which is across from Vandal Recycling, you'll see the arch stakes up, so they've already marked the area where they're going to start construction. It's just taking them a little bit longer. The same thing with Carbacore, that's the big white building. I want to say they started construction last fall, and it's just taking them a little longer. But once they're done, they're basically moving their headquarters from Rutgersville and bringing all their jobs down here.
They're the board company.
I'm sorry?
The board company?
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's not the
board company. No, not Carbacore.
Yeah, so the board company, storyboards.com, they moved into the old Blue Ridge.
They're not out here.
They probably missed it by a month. They moved in July or early August.
Yeah. We'll do an annual summary, too, where you get kind of the whole view of the whole year. Just look in the last 3 or 4 months, things that have happened that have actually happened. The other ones are still being worked.
Right. So storyboard.com, really quick, they've got 8 employees. They're an e-commerce business, so they don't need too many employees. They do a lot of importing from international companies or areas.
I just spoke to one of my former players. He rides his bike all over Colorado and puts on Facebook all the time. I said, dude, you got to buy your haulers from here.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about the Ready Mix?
Wilson Ready Mix? Yeah. Uh-huh. If you've driven by their...
Don't we already have another one up there?
No, this is the one that's been
this
landed.
This is the one.
And they're starting to get...
Are they already starting?
Okay, well, there was some controversy with Louisa and Fluvanna. They had Ready Mix or something back some years, and they went over there and didn't get on our side. Remember some of that discussion some years back?
There's one, the one that's east of Zion's Crossroads on 250 is in Louisa.
Okay, yes. That's, I guess, what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, it's not Allison, it's a different company.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
They know each other.
Yep.
And then Lynchburg Roofing, probably heard some news about their announcement. I talked to Chris a while back, and they're looking to have a ribbon cutting of grand opening in the first quarter of 2018. But they're in the process of hiring. Once they're fully hired out, it'll be about 2,500 jobs. Greenberry's Coffee, we had them come to the technical review committee meeting last month, and they want to move pretty quick. I would guess within the next year they'll have their headquarters here. They're going to move their headquarters down to Black Crossroads. So
that was definitive then.
I don't want to say it's a done deal because you never know, but he's moving forward. He's already paid for an engineering team to work with our team.
But the ones above that are done deals.
So I count about 120 jobs and nearly $15, $16 million worth of investment in Fluvanna County.
That we know.
Yeah, more. I'd say that's a pretty big win. I'd say that field of dreams that we're building is working out pretty well.
How many of them are verified? Right?
How did they do that without a
Well, the active
plan?
Projects.
Because they know it's coming.
Just partnerships and relationships that we just started working together on.
Right. But the back page is telling the ones that are done deals.
Oh, yeah.
The first one you had that said...
County Project Digital.
Williams and some kind of...
Williams and Alexander.
Right,
Alexander.
And you said that they had a rating. I mean, they were at 1, 2, 3, or 4, meaning...
No, they're low.
They're low.
Because they have raw land. They don't have any kind of wetland survey, any environmental studies.
Right.
They have...
No water and sewer yet.
And that's partly what we're working
right,
with them on. And the site readiness, shovel ready site development.
If we could at least get it rezoned and cleared,
Let's have the table.
That's 3 to 6 months that
And when we're going to be talking to you about some zonings we'd like the board to initiate, because it will advance the project pretty substantially.
And we've got two new child care businesses moving in Fluvanna County.
ABC.
One across here is Demetrius Learning Center.
Oh, right, yeah,
setting
Main
up.
Street.
One down at the Swing and Tea. It used to be called a Swing and Tea.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
going to be a daycare center.
Cross from State Shed.
Ms. Payne is having an opening on the 21st. She's having fundraising.
And one has to assume that the Light Academy will expand its jobs as well, too. With the
I think that's their intention, too.
Mm-hmm.
They'll probably pull teachers from the schools.
Retired ones.
Yeah, that's
great job. I mean, fantastic work. Wonderful. It's great to see its progress, and this report is really very, very good.
Thank you.
And what we'll do is have him do this as cumulative. You'll see each quarter, but then you'll have a cumulative set of numbers, because it's important for people to understand there's a lot going on. Even if we can't talk about the specifics in public, there's a lot going on every day.
I don't know
if Mr. Stevens and Mr. Smith and all the planning and planning staff are really working on lots of things all the time with this.
See, that's why our unemployment rate is lower, Mr. There, it's because we're really busting our butts right now, making this
absolutely. You can tell that they're all coming in here.
140 jobs. That's that half a percent differential right there. Just saying.
All right.
Speculation.
I don't know if you can do this.
Taxpayers' money.
Well, I'd say we're doing all right.
You've lost control.
I'm too tired, and I'm just gonna sit here and let it finish. If you can break it down to put it into categories of beginning phases, been there, a couple of years, and then the ones, like I said, these are ones that we've already accomplished in this past 3 months. If you could give us
a
category breakdown like that, then we can look at specific numbers of, the back page. I counted it up. You said 15 million. I won't tell you 15 million, but I said 6.7
million. Yeah, I was counting deja vu.
6.7 million, I'll take that, and that's what we know is done. So,
yeah.
How about Home Depot, have they said?
We're working it in the corner property.
We need some dress stores up there.
Dress store?
Boutiques.
You do well with that.
It's
going to
be before I lose, and if we don't have any residents there.
Before I talk about this, it was just a minute, Mr. Chair. It was mentioned that we have somebody just, we were talking about pipelines, and we have the gas pipelines running through it, but there's no real extensions coming off of that. Are there any conversations about having that happen in Zion's Crossroads? Because that's, as you mentioned earlier.
Briefly, I submitted an application about a month and a half ago to have a line, hypothetically, what it would cost to have a line from the Williams Transco
Western side of town, back this way.
Already talked to Andy Wade, the Economic Development Director in Louisa County, about the possibility of a Go Virginia project.
Yeah, that makes sense. As you said that.
There's no need not to do that if it's that close.
What kind of distance and money projection do you have on that? Or you haven't even looked at it that far.
It's probably 5 miles.
Yeah, it's less than 6 miles from the county. 6 miles from the county line back to 250 and 15.
Right.
But the pipeline is not all the way to the county line. And you would want to populate it there, but then Louisa would want to run it up along to their business park.
Yeah,
or other
Spring Creek.
All right.
The last thing
I wanted to ask add on this one, and this is something new. Thought about it the other day, and I'll go back to our bus tour that we took. The wineries have been trying to join the Monticello Wine Trail. They're working towards it. But here's something I'm going to throw out there at you. Could we possibly speak with Goochland and possibly Louisa and have a Central Virginia wine tour trail? I don't know what the ins and outs of it are, but something that we could work with the counties together, and then we could advertise that in Richmond since we're 40 miles closer.
Yeah, we've had conversations with Orange, Louisa, and us because it's the 15 trail. And so it was,
Out to Goochland because you got the two right across from county line at Goochland, Columbia.
But we've tried to tie it in with Monticello in the past.
Absolutely. Right. We're still working towards that.
You're
well sure
you'll be getting. Here's where we are right now.
Okay.
American Viticulture Area. The
you've been on the wait list for 2 years now.
Right.
Next up. Right now, the federal system is holding that approval up. Once that's approved, the viticulture area will be, in Cabana County, it would consist of over half of the county. So essentially from the James River up to the Ravana, that V shape. Bottles will go up, unfortunately. The real estate for the current vineyards will go up. We'll be able to market this viticultural area. That was one of the selling points that the folks with Project Wentz bought into, was in 2 or 3 years, this is going to be a good area for tourism and for their business. And then we'll be able to continue those progressions with Goodfellow County. Maybe it expands into their community.
Maybe it includes the northern end of our county too.
Right, but once we get that, viticultural designation, that's when we're going to be included into the Monticello Wine Trail. That's the only way. That's just
all right.
So we're heading that way though.
Okay, right. I have Fork Union is we don't out across the street from the market is completely empty. Have we ever thought about talking to the lady that owns that property? I think she lives in Washington, D.C.
I can talk to her.
To do something, I don't know. I don't know if she comes down here, she doesn't care about her property. I think if she would come down on the rent, if she would spruce it up a little bit and do some things, we may be able to get some businesses in there.
Is that the hardware store you're talking about, Moselle?
Yeah, it's a little hardware store.
Yeah.
But we used to have a laundromat there. Now, I don't know if Fuzzy Water can take a laundromat. People have to go all the way to Scottsville. Okay, he's not paying any attention to me.
He's not.
I'll reach out.
I'll get with him. Jason, and
the project, solar farm project, can we talk to Central Virginia Electric Co-op to see what kind of capacity, if any, would be available to the Zion Crossroads area through that project, and how that might fit in, large scale industrial type of
balance?
Because if you've got gas, you've got water, and you've got power, really.
Yeah, not specifically. I don't believe, and I'll follow up with them. I don't believe their intention was to power Zion Crossroads.
No, I know it isn't, but I'm saying, does that offer any potential there, right?
It could.
Yeah. It's worth having a conversation.
It's very expensive power, solar energy is the cost is.
Yeah, but the infrastructure they put in, they
right, you don't understand.
They're gonna have land capacity there.
If they can
have
some way take care of that expense.
All right.
Have that conversation.
Thank you very much, sir.
A lot going on.
Yes.
Yeah,
all right.
Great. Great.
Bravo.
Next up is the consent agenda. And here we go. Not much to read, thank goodness. Q, minutes of September 29, 2017, elected officials breakfast, Ms. Harris. R, minutes of October 4, 2017, Kelly Blandrew Harris. S, accounts payable report, September 2017, Mr. Dahl. T, FY18, Commonwealth Attorneys, Victim Witness Grant Supplemental Appropriation, Ms. Twisdale. That's it. Anything you want pulled there, Mr. Weaver?
I saw
you going through your book. I knew it was coming.
Yep, it's always coming, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Mr. Dahl's already moved.
Good. Page 401 on the minutes. When we're talking about the special presentation to Gary Ellis, wonder if we could put something in there about his wife, because she was in the picture also. I thought it would be good to put something in there about her. I don't know what the board thinks.
The family was present.
Yes.
We took the picture up here.
Yes.
Yes.
Just an addition.
To what, sir?
Just mention her name.
Gary Ellis' presentation, she came up with him, and put something in that where it says, Mr. Nichols invited Mr. Ellis to come forward to receive a certificate.
In the minutes.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
We will. We'll update that.
Okay.
Accompanied by his wife.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
I was all over that.
No,
and then we come back to page 102. You come down about a third of the way. Ratification of advertisement of temporary ordinance change to move the sentence. In other words, you come down to that last sentence. It says 2017 regarding the temporary designation of the, and there's nothing else after that. It's the ratification of advertisement of temporary ordinance change. Am I missing something on that?
No, we are.
Okay. Well, I'm just checking because I miss enough of them.
No problem.
It sounds in magic ink.
I thought so. I thought maybe it had a business sneak in there,
if you hold
too.
It up to the light, yeah. It's Project Limbo or something.
Exactly.
And also, we come on over to item 11. Under new business, where it says year-end balance estimates, Eric Dahl, finance director, presented the preliminary revenue and expenditure balance estimate. I certainly think that the main topic of that also was a $3 million surplus, and I'd like to have that so
possible $3 million.
Yeah, possible. Right.
$3 million.
Whatever. It was somewhat arbitrary.
I threw you right under the bus, Mr. Dahl.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's all I have.
We will definitely put that in there, but I'm a little uncomfortable putting in raw, off-the-cuff estimates.
Well, you said it publicly, so if it's
but
said
we've told you over and over and over, it was raw, off-the-cuff.
Well, then say it's raw, off-the-cuff.
Okay.
Identified, right?
Yes.
All right. Any other questions about the consent agenda?
No.
Okay, do we have a motion?
I so move that we approve the consent agenda Q through U.
Q through T. Q through T. U is the verb.
Q U. Okay.
Second.
Okay, motion's made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. The city was absent. Is there any unfinished
business?
Wait
a second. Nobody asked any questions about the AP report.
About the who?
AP report.
It's done.
I've already hit my desk.
Already,
you know, he's already fixed.
All right, unfinished business. Do we have any unfinished business? Okay, we'll move forward with the new business. You don't have a tag. FCHS fireworks display request.
So, I'm going to cover this one because I said, told Chief Brenton and Mr. Zoll they didn't need to be here, but. The reason you're getting this is because there is no specific ordinance right now that we have in place to approve fireworks or a fire marshal designate to do that. But based on state code, you can approve fireworks demonstration, and it's happened like that in the past. The problem with this one is we just heard about this. Mr. Zoll asked about it, and we started checking. We checked with Fred's office, and the problem is they want to do this fireworks display Friday night because for homecoming at the high school. So it's been vetted by the fire marshal. It's been vetted by the state because Chief Brent worked by the fire chief. Chief Brent worked with the state and with the forestry service and with our building official, and they're all okay with it and acceptable. And so that's what's in your package, and it's a matter of timing for you to concur with this fireworks request. All the agencies that needed to review it have and approved, and the applicant who's doing the fireworks display is here in case you have any questions.
No, I just walked out to practice today and was like, okay, we must be having a brush fire somewhere. And I see Mr. Wright and
getting ready.
Chief Brent are sitting out there trying to figure out where to put it, and then they're killing me. They're killing me, Smalls, because we got a practice field with about 6 pieces of grass left on it. And they said, yeah, you see that big spot of grass right there? Yeah, that's where we're going to set them off. And I was like, dude, we got 6 spots of grass. You're going to kill one of them. I'm sorry.
That's for the homecoming.
Would y'all like to hear from the
homecoming Friday?
Yes.
For the homecoming Friday.
Right.
Hopefully we get to set a lot of them off. That means
that's
we score.
Good.
I trust they'll do a good job.
Yes.
Any questions for anyone? Or we're good?
We're good.
Gonna get the motion?
I move to approve fireworks display on October 20th, 2017 at Savannah County High School for homecoming 2017 as presented.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. I'm struggling now. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Ms. Seeger's absent. We also have Girl Scout Gold Award resolution for Lauren House Connect.
This was a matter of timing, too, because her ceremony is on October 24th, and Mrs. Booker got us some information on it. Ms. Harris put this together, and it's just like the Eagle Scout Awards that you do resolutions. This one's just for a Girl Scout Gold Award.
I have been giving out Eagle Scouts, and then some of you all have done the same for years. And every time I go somewhere, I say, what do the Girl Scouts get? I finally met a mother at the VFW pork dinner this weekend, and her daughter is receiving the gold award. And since this is our first one, would you please let me read it? Okay.
Sure, ma'am. I've been married for way too many years to say no.
All right. It's resolution number 12-2017. Recognizing Lauren, last name please.
House Connect.
House Connect. Whereas the Girl Scouts of the United States of America is an organization serving over 2.7 million girls, which was founded by Juliet Gordon Lowe in 1912 to promote citizenship training and personal development. And whereas the Gold Award is the highest achievement award in Girl Scouting and symbolizes outstanding accomplishments in the areas of leadership, community service, career planning, and personal development. And whereas the Girl Scout Gold Award can only be earned by girls age 14 to 18 or in grades 9 through 12 and is received by less than 6% of those individuals entering the Girl Scouting movement. And whereas Lauren House Connect has dedicated much time and energy to the principles and disciplines imposed by the Girl Scouts of America and has recently attained through hard work and unwavering focus the pinnacle of Girl Scouting, the Gold Award. And whereas, as a member of Girl Scout Troop 2047, Lauren also received the Bronze Award and Silver Award providing help to the Fluvanna County SPCA. Lauren's Gold Award focused on raising and training Golden Retriever Wheat to be a guard dog and promoting the work of the nonprofit Guard Dogs for the Blind. And whereas this exemplary record of service and accomplishment brings honor to herself and family, to her troop, and to her community. And whereas the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors fully supports the program of the Girl Scouts of America and recognizes the important services they provide to the youth of our country. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors joins Lauren's family and friends in congratulating her on these accomplishments and acknowledges the good fortune of the county to have such an outstanding young woman as one of the citizens. Isn't that wonderful?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Kelly. This is
the
first one.
Can I ask you a question,
Moselle? Yes.
Can she join the Boy Scouts?
She could.
We'll do the motion. She's going to reprint it while you're in closed session.
Okay. Okay.
We had expected Ms. Seeger to be here, so she'll reprint it while you're in closed session.
All right. So I move. Okay.
Yep.
I move to approve a resolution entitled Resolution Recognizing Lois House Connect Achievement of Girl Scouts Gold Award Status.
Second. Motion's made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
The first one.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.
And I will be there giving to her on the 24th.
Good job, Ms. Booker and Mrs. Harris.
Okay. We will now move to our second round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Seeing no one, I'll close the second round of public comments. And Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Flatley County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A3, Section 2.2-3711A5, Section 2.2-3711A7, Section 2.2-3711A8, Section 2.2-3711A19 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for purposes of discussing personnel, real estate, respective industry, litigation, legal matters, and public safety, and we will be here all night.
Ms. Walker, before we go any further, is there Mr. Pozzella here? Mr. Pozzella? No, Mr. Pozzella.
Mr. Chairman,
right, do we have a second?
Second.
Before you second that,
yes.
I would like to take a very brief matter under personal matters not related to public business. It's subsection 4.
Mm-hmm. Subsection 4. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Section 2.2-3711A4, privacy of individuals.
All right, second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 4-0. We are in closed session, and we better hurry or we're going to have O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, considered in the meeting, or considered in the meeting.
Do I have a second, please?
Second.
Mr. O'Brien makes a motion. Ms. Booker seconded. Mr. Weaver?
Sure.
Yes. Yes.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0.
I move to adjourn.
We got to extend.
I think a motion to extend the meeting.
Till 5 minutes.
1 o'clock.
No, make it. You know, 12 o'clock, don't mess around with a minute.
There you go.
Second.
We have a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I move with adjourn.
Don't wait seconds. I'm throwing a gavel at somebody.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Good night.
Good night.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.
Yeah.
Oh. Lord, we're